This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man Can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling.
So. That's what she said!
So why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L. Oh. What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Lynch's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course, as the lacrosse player. Bismarck. No, was it Bismarck? Was that
Bismarck.
Bismarck. No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big butts play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the things.
I think they might hit shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I'm just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what you're
our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
You're thinking of your white lies. You're putting on your bedroom eyes. You say you're coming home, but you won't say when. But I can feel it.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Just Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening inside the PTB Man Cave. And we have quite a show ahead of you. And it's a very fitting show, I guess. A very, let's say, bring thing full circle for us here. And let me first bring in my PSE, Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you doing tonight?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 297 of the Place to Be podcast, as we are right around the corner from the big three bills.
Next week. So the cool thing, Scott, mm-hmm. is that we're finishing a year.
Yep.
And we're going to wrap up 2001. And then this Wednesday, we have Kevin Kelly on to look at the second half of 01. Mm-hmm. And then we hit episode 300. So it's kind of nice. We're going to start 02 fresh in the 300s. It was kind of perfect symmetry that we ended a year. And we're going to have Kevin on, and we're going to bring things all full circle as we wrap up the 200s. Yep. So it's been quite a year, quite 100 episodes, mm-hmm. and
yes.
we'll talk about that next Wednesday. Mm-hmm. But we have three more to go till we get there. So why don't we dive right in to the show?
Okay. It is, of course, the final.
Hey, what is going on here?
Oh, forgot you were in there. Still smells like nacho cheese. I have to ask my buddy Mr. Sutton to clean this trap a little better. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault, it is not only the end of the year, but is the undisputed end of an era. No video. Tonight on the Place to Be podcast, we bring you Vengeance 2001. Of course, at least for this one month, they abandoned Armageddon for obvious reasons.
Yes.
With it being 2 days shy of the 3 month anniversary of 9/11, using Armageddon probably wasn't too smart. They'll bring it back in 02. All right. December 9th, 2001, live from the San Diego Sports Arena in San Diego, California.
Home of Sexy Steve.
That's right. Your buy rate, 0.78. Not bad. Your attendance, 11,800. And we are in a new building, JR. Give us the history of the SDSA.
Well, you know, Scott, it is now called the Valley View Casino Center, formerly known as the San Diego Sports Arena and the iPay One Center.
Yep.
Indoor arena located on Sports Arena Boulevard in Point Loma, San Diego, off Interstate 8. Built in 1966. Owned by Arena Group 2000. Mm-hmm. Cost a mere $6.4 million to be built, but in today's dollars, that'd be $46.5 million.
Still pretty cheap.
For arena football, holds 12,000. Ice hockey 12920. Looks like a max is for mixed martial arts, which is 16,100.
Right.
A lot of teams played here, Scott. I'll rip the room for you. We have the San Diego Gulls of the WHL, the San Diego Rockets, of course, would eventually become the Houston Rockets of the NBA, the San Diego Conquistadors of the ABA, the San Diego Sails, also of the ABA, the San Diego Mariners of the WHA, the San Diego Clippers of the NBA, eventually became the Los Angeles Clippers.
Yep.
This is your team, the San Diego Sockers. S-O-C-K-E-R-S of the N-A-S-L slash M-I-S-L slash I slash C-I-S-L. The San Diego Gulls resurrected for the IHL in 1990 through 95, and again for the ECHL through 06. The San Diego... this is like WCF superstars. The San Diego Sockers 2 came back for the WISL in 01. Very original.
Yes.
San Diego Riptide of the AF2, the San Diego Barracudas of the RHI, the San Diego Seduction of the LFL, and the San Diego Sockers are back again in the PASL, currently playing, the only team that resides there right now. The San Diego Seduction, Scott, is a chartered team in the Lingerie Football League.
I thought it was.
Played its inaugural 2009-10 season here at the Valley View Casino Center. Do you know who the quarterback is for this team?
Not a clue.
The lovely Kelly Scarangelo, backed up by Kendra Myers. Running backs, Tamika Estrella and Aubrey Hutchinson. Wide receiver, we have Cassie McLean, Jenna Lynn DeJesus, Vanessa Neff, Alex Carinoli, Shannon Peterson, Jennifer Frazier, Natasha Lynch. Working the offensive line, we have Audrey Latsko, Jennifer Miller, Estrella Alcarez, and Amber Reed. Only one defensive lineman, Torquase Frazier. Curly Vacant, the linebackers, and the defensive backs a little thin as well, with Christy Garcia and Sarah Montez.
So they only played three on defense?
Well, they only had four games in 2010. They defeated your Dallas team at the Cotton Bowl, 24-13, to go to 1-0. They beat Seattle by 1 point, 26-25, to move to 2-0. Lost to Chicago 50-12 at the Sears Center.
Nice.
And wrapped up their season on January 1st, 2011. They lost to Los Angeles 18-6 to finish the season at 2-2. The Dallas Desire, Scott, is your team.
The Dallas Desire.
I wonder if Forchetti has a Dallas Desire jersey.
Yes.
So there you go. Way more about their throwbacks than you ever needed to know.
Yeah, exactly. And how much what their throwbacks are. All right. And your announcers, for the first time in 10 months, good old J.R. Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler. And it took about, I know I was very excited about his return when we did the Raw review, but it took about two matches for me to get sick of him already.
Oh, Lawler? Yeah.
So
I'm done with him already, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, it was getting pretty tiresome. Okay. We have one Sunday Night Heat match, JR. What is that?
The Acolytes, still ticking around, defeated Billy Gunn and Chuck Palumbo. We mentioned them briefly at Survivor Series, but we'll get more into them in the coming months. New team on the block. A lot has happened, but I think we covered most of it, Scott. So I think we'll direct everyone to last week's Vintage Vault Extra. We reviewed the November 19th, 2001 Raw. Talked all about the big returns, the departures, the reset, and we'll touch on it as we move match to match, but I don't think we need to go into all the details here. One thing, though, is your boy,
yes,
Mr. Triple H, was on the promotional poster.
May I?
Go ahead, sir.
There was some controversy surrounding this show and the promotional poster that was released earlier in the fall. You know, because you remember, they release the posters to the vendors, they stick the, you know, the leaflets in the cable envelopes and that kind of thing. And prior to the pay-per-view, the poster was Triple H, who you had not seen since, of course, popping his quad the night after Judgment Day back in May, leaning on the head of a sledgehammer, looking very intent and
pensive.
Solemn.
Yes.
Now, they didn't reference or promote Triple H in any way.
Nope.
And we'll talk about that as we, you know, talk about the matches. But, you know, you're thinking, whoa, I did. Like, wow, maybe he'll run out, cause something to happen.
Well, see, I mean, fans then were not much different than fans now, reading into a million things. And,
exactly.
And then getting angry when they don't occur.
Exactly.
So there was a lot of outrage on this one.
There was. It also happened once before, JR. If you remember the Fully Loaded 2000 poster was Steve Austin's head with the hand and the dice. And, of course, Austin was nowhere near that show. I remember running into our friend Kevin Kelly making me laugh at this. I'll have to bring this up to him next week. I don't know if I had already. My buddy and I ran into Kevin at a Hooters in Milford, Connecticut, and my buddy walks up to him and goes, "So what about Austin?" He says, "Well, he's eating his wings. It was so bad." But in any event, this isn't the first time this has happened.
No.
But at this point, this was a big deal because Triple H had been gone for a while.
Right.
You know, face heel, what was going to happen.
And they were complaining a lot about false advertising in this one. They were pretty upset. But, I mean, the truth is a lot of these promotional posters are created months in advance. You know, I'm sure it's an outside vendor that does it at the time. And, you know, it's probably just too late for them to pull it back and whatever. I mean, guys are on posters all the time. It's never, ever been an indicator. It can be, but it never has stated that they, you know, that they're an indicator of the shows. So,
right.
To me, you know, not a complete surprise, but
no,
it's still, but, you know, still disappointing. I think a lot of people were hoping he'd be back, but he was not quite ready. So hopefully, next time. But I do like that. I picture that, like him, that poster on your wall, and you kind of sit in a chair and look back up at him in the same kind of sad face,
solemn look. Yeah, I wish they did sell the. They didn't do the. I don't remember them selling like the posters on the on ShopZone back then. That would have been kind of cool. I definitely would have bought it. I thought it was a neat poster.
Sitting in the chair waiting for you, looking nervous.
Oh please, move on.
All right, I love the awesome opening video here with the manic, with the classical music and
Fellini,
Freddie Blassie kind of directing it and Freddie Fellini, and it was a very manic 3 weeks. So I thought they did a nice job with this video of showing that manic, all the changes that have happened. You know,
yes.
Austin's back to a face. Angle's back to a heel. Chris Jericho cemented as a heel. Rock is a face. Vince is a heel. You know, it's like all the stuff that happened over the last 3 weeks, they really exemplified it nicely in the chaos that we've seen since Survivor Series. Definitely felt like a new era.
Mm-hmm.
The first post-invasion, even really the first post-Monday Night War pay-per-view officially, you know, kind of has a complete reset feel to it. A little bit of old, a little bit of new mixed in. But completely different altogether.
Mm. Yeah, I agree.
I guess we can talk about this in depth later, but I'm gonna lay the question on the table for you now.
Sure.
Was it too soon to unify the belts? Should they have waited till WrestleMania? So keep that in the back of your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And when we get to the three main events, we'll discuss.
Okay. All right. Well, we do have matches before those main events.
And we actually had something even before the match.
Yes. Out came the aforementioned now heel co-owner of the company, Vincent Kennedy McMahon.
Kind of a weird open. So, I mean, we haven't really opened with a promo in a long time.
No, on pay-per-view?
Yeah.
It's been a long time. I can't remember.
Maybe. I feel like, was there one in the McMahon and Helmsley? Oh, there was one definitely. Was it King of the Ring 98?
Hmm.
No, Over the Edge 98. Wasn't where Vince came out. There was one of those in 98.
Yeah. I want to say Over the Edge, too. Where he kind
of
cements the it might be Over the Edge because I think at the time he's cementing the.
Oh, you know that might not have opened. That might have actually came like two matches in.
Maybe in the middle. Hmm.
But there was one that like Sable introduced him. Was that King of the Ring? It had to be because she wrestled it Over the Edge. I thought King of the Ring like she came out and introduced him. Maybe he didn't talk. I forget.
Yeah, I'll have to think of that. There is definitely one in that mid 98 stretch between like Unforgiven and Fully Loaded, where he comes out to begin the show. Didn't do it at SummerSlam. I know that.
There was not in. Was any 2000 with the McMahon Helmsley? I feel like Judgment Day 2000, maybe. No, I just know that was during the whole 20-minute promo to open Raw.
Oh yeah,
so I didn't know if there was one there. So anyway, so Vince comes out. He's upset because he got a stink face on Raw.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we can talk about that in a bit. But he had the, as we talked about last Monday, he had the Kiss My Ass Club thing going on. So he made William Regal kiss his ass and a couple more people. And to pay that off, The Rock came out and demanded that Vince was going to get a kiss someone else's ass, and he brought out at first he was going to tease his own, then he brought out Trish, and Vince was all excited and rocked.
He did his own, then he brought out, it was on the Today. By the way, I watched it on the network.
Right.
That was the first pay-per-view study research I did before Evolved on the network.
There you go.
By the way, but we're going to mention, what do you have it in running in the background?
Just the live stream right now. So it's
the Rock DVD, right?
Yep. And I have Raw on the other TV.
I have Punk on one and the stream on the other. All right. It was Rock was going to do it, and then JR came out.
That's right, JR. We'll get to
JR
that.
Came out, and he was going to kiss JR. Then Trish came out to kind of tease Vince a bit, and that's when he first says,
you sick freak.
And then he brought out Rikishi. And Rikishi like really pulled up his, I mean, he had like a thong on, like a thong. It was like no clothing there, and Vince went right into the moldy fruit keister.
Yeah, so then he got the, so he's all pissed off about it, and now also we're right back to Austin McMahon again too. You know, it's like the same feel. McMahon's the boss, and we're back to the heel, the face rebel Austin and Rock, and
But this time, Vince has a little bit of a different foil, right, Scott? I mean, it's not the same. The Natch.
That's right. I love the. I loved the black turtleneck. Black. He looked like he owned the Bada Bing or something.
he looked. Like he I mean, talk about guys that look. I know it's you know a little bit unfair at this point. It's been 13 years, but I mean, talk about looking completely different. A guy that just. I mean, he just looks so much younger and spry and in shape and the. And just thinner, like his face was on his bloated and blown out. As it would become.
Now he looks like a what? A gnome?
a troll. Troll doll. He doesn't look like the troll doll anymore. At this point, anyway.
No.
So he comes out and he just says, basically, fuck this, we're starting the show, enough talking. And I think this is just to kind of push Flair's like the owner of the fans, whereas Vince was kind of the douchebag owner for himself.
Right, exactly.
Crowd was red hot here, though, especially when Flair came out.
Yeah, and, you know, we're talking about San Diego, so we're not exactly talking about the Garden or, you know, Boston or anything like that. I mean, usually California. San Diego's a little different than L.A. I don't know. I find it a different atmosphere than like, normally L.A.
So
or Fresno.
Was Mark Claire sipping wine on the roof of the San Diego?
Not here. Okay. San Diego, his neck of the woods? I'm not sure. Oh, Sexy Steve is, though. Well, maybe a Mack truck sighting. All right. So... What were those, by the way, on a side note, what were those things called again that he used to clap? What were they called again?
Trucker trinkets.
Trucker trinkets, yes. Were they selling those at the concession stand?
Yes, they were.
Autographed Mack truck trucker trinkets. Okay, let's dive in. First match, kind of a random tag here, but that's fine. Kind of reestablishing some characters. I kind of dig this, actually, because it's about a guy you and I have been talking about for the last few months.
Mm-hmm.
Christian, still your World Wrestling Federation European champion, Test, who's just been, just such a fucking scumbag.
Yeah, real sleaze.
He's just a sleazeball. And good, it works, because he probably is. He probably was. But taking on kind of a new team, the team of Scotty Too Hotty, one half of the former Too Cool, and Albert, who was kind of, you know, one of those background WWF guys during the invasion. You know, he did have the IC title as a heel earlier in the year. Before any of the invasion stuff happened. So kind of a random tag team opener. No problem with it. A little over 6 minutes. Good guys win. This is, of course, before Albert would get the super awesome Matt Rotella-esque nickname of... You remember the nickname?
The Bashugana?
No. Hip Hop Hippo.
Yes, that's right.
Of course, Rotella would like that because that's what he is. It was a pretty good match. Nothing crazy. Kind of an establishment. I also thought, JR, your thoughts on this. I thought it was a good match, kind of reestablish King and JR's chemistry.
Yeah.
For pay per view. I know. We'll get to Lawler in a minute. He irritates me too. But just the general chemistry.
I
mean, JR's on fire now. He's more comfortable. I think he was getting tired of Heyman's barbs during the end of the invasion. Otherwise, not an offensive match. Nothing.
The match was fine. I didn't really care for what went on in it. I mean, so Grandmaster Sexay's been fired. He got busted to the Canadian border for trying to carry drugs over the border. So
yes,
they found it and they canned him. So now Scotty's paired with Albert. So I got a few questions on this one. What did you think of them turning Albert face? Like, I mean, him dancing, doing the hip hop hippo thing, and basically becoming a new member. They pretty much tried to redo Rikishi with him.
Yeah,
I liked where he was headed. Over the summer with the heel role. And I thought he was a better heel muscle guy than kind of a goofy face. I mean, he's fine. He's endearing in the role, but I thought it was kind of a misuse of him.
I think the problem there was, JR, I feel like there were so many heels.
Yeah,
you have
true.
Test, and now you have Jericho, and you have Angle.
Yeah, maybe it's
you have
a little
Dudleys.
Redundant.
So many heels.
I think he could have been better suited almost as another one of Vince's muscle, though, with Angle and Jericho.
Entirely possible.
Instead of, I mean, it's fine. It, you know, it's better than him doing nothing.
I mean, did you want to create another predetermined faction, though, with Vince?
No, I guess not, yeah.
You know?
They needed to refresh the tag division, so I'll give them that. I mean, they really did need some new teams because the old ones are either gone or stale. So, I mean, I'll give them that. It's just a weird use of a guy like Albert. But it was good to get some new teams in. The Test and Christian push I thought was really continuing, and I feel like this was a cool old-school opener. So I just assumed Test and Christian were going to go ahead and... win the match and continue the heel push and just kind of be an inoffensive opener.
Right.
Did you find a funny TNA were at war here? Test and Albert kind of go at it early in the match? I thought it was kind of neat.
Yes. Yes. And that's another thing. I mean, were you going to put those two together again? I mean, you could have, I guess, reunited TNA if you wanted to establish another heel team, but I don't know. I had no problem with it. It's, you know, some of these guys kind of had to be a little goofy, and you know,
well,
sometimes
it's not that they're not goofy. I just mean Albert. It just seemed like they had a good thing going with him over the summer and the heel thing with X Factor. And I know X Pac hurt, so X Factor kind of fell apart. But it's just a weird pairing. That's all.
It is weird, but I think at the same time,
well,
I think
I guess my point is too. Like Scotty, I mean, without Too Cool, what's Scotty's? Like, what's the ceiling here? You know, I mean,
the only thing I think of is if they decide to bring back the cruiserweights, it's the only real thing you could do with them,
right?
And keep them in a random low level tag. I mean, which is pretty much what it is here.
What this is. So, I mean, whatever. It is what it is. But the match was way more than expected. I thought it was gonna be a real squash, and I was shocked with the finish. I mean, the hippos weren't going anywhere, and I just really didn't understand this at
the
all.
The hippos.
Well, that's what they call them, right? The hip hop hippos.
The hippos.
I mean. Yeah, you weren't so. I mean, you were just kind of brushing it off like it was a fun little doink and dink opener. But I thought it was kind of, I thought it was really kind of productive. You put over Test and Christian really strong at Survivor Series. You have Test clean out the ring, win the Battle Royal, and be a dick over it. And Christian, you rebuilt him by giving him the European title because you'd already taken the IC off him. And then you job them here to a team that clearly has nothing going on. I mean, they're not going anywhere, Albert and Scotty. I mean, what is their ceiling? What is their peak as a team?
I don't know.
Maybe a SmackDown title match? I mean, honestly, more than that, they're not going to do much.
Yeah. I mean, I'm perusing my comments on the board, and that's pretty much what I said. I said Scotty and Albert were pretty much afterthoughts, and you know, you figured out. I thought Albert would turn on Scotty, to be honest with you. I was expecting a heel turn, so I think you and I are kind of, based on my, you know, kind of remembering my comments again, you and I were kind of on the same wavelength there. I was kind of thinking maybe Albert would turn heel on Scotty. Because
well,
otherwise,
not that.
The team did seem kind of random.
Right. I mean, the other thing they could have done is you could have done a DQ here. Because JR and King kept putting over how Test had immunity, he could do whatever he wanted, didn't have to give a shit, and couldn't, you know, wasn't afraid of being fired. So you could have done something where he just pounds the ref and then pounds him with a chair or something like that. At least keep them strong. It was just really weird that his job Christian out clean basically to Albert of all people. Unless we're going to set up Albert for a Euro run, I don't know. It's just this really weird booking decision here off the bat. And I get if you want to start the crowd off with a hot match with faces going over, but don't feed Test and Christian here. Then use another team, you know.
Right. I'm sure there were other low level. You could have. I mean, where was Justin Credible? Right. He wasn't hurt, was he? Did they fire him?
But well, he was part. I mean, they didn't want. I don't think they didn't want to bring all the Alliance guys in like immediately. I think they were trying to.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Right.
They're trying to be a little smart about how they just.
No, the whole Alliance thing just went out of my head. I was thinking of the whole, since there was no X Factor with X Pac hurt, you know, what was he doing? But then I realized he was part of the Alliance.
Right, yeah. So I think they were just trying to
keep selling that.
Right, and bring them in one by one when it made sense. So
yeah, later on down the line. So
yeah, so fine opener, just a weird, weird decision for two guys that seemingly were. I mean, I feel like we were gushing over them at Survivor Series, you know, a week ago or 2 weeks ago. Talking about how far they had come and how strong they had looked, and they were two of the strongest guys coming out of that show, and then all of a sudden jobbing here in the opener to a team that didn't exist weeks ago and is going nowhere fast. But
yeah, that was very weird. I maybe it was just to get the crowd going, but yeah, you could have used two better heels or two less serviceable heels than these two guys who you were in the midst of hot pushes. And then Tess comes back out later on in the night for we'll get to that later, but
yeah.
Comes out for a really smarmy promo, but which actually was evolving his character. So.
It's almost like his backstage character and antics were completely separate than the guy wrestling this match. It was odd, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like, backstage, he's got the sleaze thing going on, he's kind of getting a push, and then he comes out here and him and Christian job to these two bums. It made no sense to me.
Exactly. So, all right. Next up, we have our first title match of the evening, as the World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental title is on the line. Your champion, the guy who gets the mail, and that is Edge, who, of course, won it at Survivor. He won it at Unforgiven.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, lost at Unforgiven, won it back at No Mercy, and then won the unification match with the aforementioned Test at Survivor Series. Taking on a guy who was able to keep his job by means any means necessary, if you will. William Regal, of course, turned heel in October. And helped Steve Austin win back the WWF title from Kurt Angle after Kurt won it at Unforgiven. Joined the Alliance very late.
Yes.
As the weeks commissioner.
Ago.
Yeah. As the commissioner. And, of course, lost his job when the Alliance lost at the Survivor Series. But How did he get his job back, JR? How did he stay with the company?
Well, as we talked about last week, he puckered up and joined the Vince McMahon Kiss My Ass Club. He was the first inaugural member. And as a result, Vince gave him his gig back. And Regal quickly kind of snapped after that. I think he was embarrassed by what he did and went yeah. out and to reprove himself as a badass. And part of that was, as we said, remember, he mauled Taz on that same night later, like in like under a minute, beat him. And started using a weapon of choice, Scott. Started breaking out the old brass knucks.
Love it.
Would hide him around the ringside area and pull him out during matches and
love it.
Bash guys with him. And he earns an intercontinental title match here with Edge. Mm-hmm. And I thought this was a very good move to put Edge in this feud. You know, put him with a reliable worker, a guy that they're pushing strong as a heel that they're trying to rebuild and reestablish, and see if Edge can continue to grow. So we've seen him win King of the Ring. He had a nice match with Lance Storm, had his little feud with his brother Christian, had a very good match with Test at Survivor Series, and now you put him in here with a guy that you assume will carry him through the next evolution of his character and through his ring work to continue to grow. And I don't think we quite get that outcome, at least off the bat here.
I did like this match a lot, but I see where you're coming from there. I love brass knucks. That's like old school. That's like old school NWA, like roll of quarters in your hand action for me. I dig that shit. So
the brass knucks are great. I just thought the chemistry between these guys seems a bit off. You know, Regal kept trying to grind Edge down, and Edge seemed a little out of sorts in this match. Like, you know, you talked about a Survivor Series, how what's Edge's style? What does he do best? I feel like this is the one area where he was weakest.
Well, I'll tell you why. He is not used to guys like this. I mean, let's think about most of the guys he's wrestled.
I don't think
year.
Anybody is in the promotion. I mean, who's the closest to Regal style, Angle, when he wants to be?
I guess. Austin? Not really.
No.
Not Triple H. Rock? No. Nobody.
I think Angle's the closest because he could work it. He never really did, but he could.
Right. But he could work that grinding kind of, that European, you know, mangle style.
Yeah.
And think about who Edge has faced this year. You know, he's in the tags. And then we started turning, you know, when he started going solo, he feuded with, you know, Lance Storm, who not anything like that kind of character. He's a high flyer. Christian, high flyer. Test, power guy. Not really a grinder per se, but just a striker, heavy striker. And now Regal, who's very different. And I don't think Edge was quite used to having to reverse out of those kinds of moves, and high flying really doesn't work in this style when you've been rubbed down to a nub. It's kind of hard to high fly your way out of it, in my opinion. And so that's where I think I still like the match. Actually, I don't think it was terrible, but yes, I do agree.
I think it depends on what your expectations were going in. I mean, if you were looking at it as like a kind of a master's level class that Edge was going to take with Regal, and kind of. If you look at it, I almost look at it like it's a training match on pay-per-view. You know, it's like, let's see how Edge can adapt to this guy. And if you go with that mindset, from kind of that point of view, I think it's an interesting watch to watch Edge try and keep up with Regal and wrestle this style. If you're just looking from the outside in, looking for a great match, I don't think you got it. But I liked the brass knucks as well. It was kind of cool. I thought it was a good weapon for kind of a calculating heel like he was. Nothing brash or nothing flashy, just this, you know, good old pair of knuckle dusters that he pulls out of the ring post and everything else.
Yeah, see, that was the best part of the storyline, was that he was so calculating about it. Like, he knew that he couldn't hide them in his tights.
Right.
So he'd stick them under the ring post, under, like, the apron, you know, rope there, or, you know, under the ring or under a chair. I enjoyed that psychology where he was definitely outsmarting the refs, kind of using his experience as commissioner to kind of outsmart opponents. I really dug that a lot.
And I thought the cool part of the psychology of the finish of this one is Regal had been working the mat the whole time, and he pretty much dominated this whole match. Edge didn't get much in.
No.
And what made it cool was Regal went away from what had been working, right? And that was grinding Edge and working him on the mat and beating him down.
Yep.
Goes for the knucks and gets kind of dicked around. You know, he's dicking around with him a little bit and gets caught up, and Edge catches him and then finishes him with a quick – was it the spear or the roll-up?
It was a quick spear.
Right, quick spear, and then he rolled him up. And, you know, showed Edge's resiliency, that he took a beating like that and was able to bounce back and get that win.
Right.
And I like that. I like that part of the story, that Regal went away. And you can almost see the frustration and the disappointment in himself. You know, he's like, fuck, you know, I went away from what was working. I fucked around with the brass knuckles to try and put him away, and he gave me a moment of, you know, weakness, a moment of an opening for him. And Edge took advantage, hit the spear, and pinned him. Mm-hmm. So I liked that part of the match. The match itself, I just thought, was a little bit choppy. It seemed like they were still trying to work on the chemistry. But it's one that definitely screamed to have an extended feud.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And I think that one match for Edge would have told him, well, you know, okay, I get it. I struggled a little bit here, but I kind of figured out what, you know, what I can do to make this look better. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what he did. I think he, and I think you'll see better from them as we progress. But I still thought it was entertaining, but I do agree with you that there were some moments where I think Edge was a little kind of out of sorts on how to get out of things or how to, you know, go from one piece of a match to another.
He looked like a guy that stopped the confidence, like didn't follow the confidence he had built and was relying on Regal to carry him through the match.
Mm-hmm.
Like a guy that kind of lost that flow that he was in and deferred to Regal instead of being the guy that not carried, but was the lead man with Storm or Christian or Test. And I know the heel usually leads, but Edge seemed to have more confidence in those matches. And here, he almost looked like he was completely deferring to Regal, almost like a sophomore point guard kind of deferring to the senior, even though he may be more talented. You know, it's like, not that Edge is more talented than Regal, but a guy that was ready to break out, but almost felt like he wasn't maybe quite permitted to in this match. He wanted to defer to Regal and try and match his style. But I like the finish, and I like where they're headed, and I thought it was cool from a learning, like a teacher-student kind of point of view, if you look at it that way, instead of actually just looking for a classic on any level.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I think, but again, I think you hit the nail on the head that I think time will help this feud, and we'll obviously see it again a couple more times. All right, speaking of chemistry, our next match lacked a lot of it, more than I anticipated.
Well, before we get to that, I just want to talk about the backstage. Angle and Flair have an awesome promo where Angle keeps making all these promises, and Flair, oh yeah, I know, okay, good, go do it. Like Angle's like, I'm gonna win, I'm gonna take the title home, I'm gonna be the next champion. Yeah, all right, good. I'm glad for you. I hope you can. We'll see you do it. We'll see you take the title home. You know, it was really funny. I thought
it was kind of like it kind of harkened back to the whole Gorilla Pillman Owen.
yeah, right. He's like, all right, yeah, go ahead, you can do it. It's good. Yeah. I'm glad. I want to see it.
I knew we'd get him to cave.
Yeah, so that was really funny. I enjoyed that. And then backstage elsewhere, Lita pledges her alliance to Matt in general, but vows to play down the middle as the referee of our next match.
Ugh. This whole thing is a mess. So obviously, you know, the tension between Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy was building over the past few months. Jeff taking risks, unnecessary risks in matches, and Matt getting a little irritated with it. And then, of course, it came to a head at Survivor Series when instead of pinning, I think it was D-Von, on the pinning D-Von or getting, I'm sorry, instead of getting out of the getting out of the cage at Survivor Series in the title match just to win the titles, he wants to do something spectacular. So he goes for a Swanton off the top rope, missed, went through a table, and then Bubba Ray pinned him, and the Dudley Boys unified the belts, which thoroughly pissed off Matt to no end. And now they decide, you know what? It's time for us to see who the better brother is. And that brings us to here. The first documented match in WWE history between Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy.
And a little bit different. And I wanted to ask you this question. Did you think it was too soon after Edge and Christian?
Yes.
Because we just did the brothers, you know, their storyline brothers. So we just did the brother split.
Yes.
A few months ago. I mean, in September.
Yep. I agree. I think that's what hurt this match. It didn't have that sachet that the Edge Christian feud did.
Not only Bray Wyatt has sachet.
And you like that, huh? He's got hillbilly sachet.
it was really quick, and it's kind of weird how the two preeminent teams of the Attitude, you know, dynasty of tag teams that started in late 98, mid 99, and ended here, now they both break up at the same time. I guess the only difference was they had a little bit more of a it didn't have the hate behind it that Edge and Christian had. I mean, Matt was angry, and this was more about just two brothers trying to prove which one was better, more than the hate, like Christian's pure jealousy and hatred for Edge. Edge and Christian was more like Brett and Owen, you know? This one's just like two guys that are out to try and prove each other. But did you think they should have had more of a gradual mutual split and just went their equal, like, face ways, and then maybe have Matt turn heel if you want to do that later down the road? Like,
yeah, I think they were just doing this to fill a slot in the undercard.
It just felt so rushed to this.
Yeah, I don't think there was any real. I honestly don't think there was any real forethought to the future between these two. I think they just wanted something to fill the undercard, and they thought, well, we did it with Edge and Christian, let's try with Matt and Jeff. And I just and instead they did something a little more they tried to do something different than Edge and Christian, but I don't think it had the bite. Both guys were getting cheered.
Well, Edge and Christian too, they were crumbling, you know, for a while. Since like the spring, and then you have the King of the Ring stuff, and it was building and building for months. I mean, this at the most was like a month and a half,
right?
With all the Lita and Trish stuff and everything else. And then, you know, that's different too than the Edge of Christian. You have Lita in the mix on this one, kind of playing down the down the middle between the two brothers, and basically trying to be even between the two, even though her and Matt are dating,
right?
And so there was a little bit of that mixed in too. And this one definitely felt more friendly. I mean, Edge of Christian had the pure hate behind it, like I said. The crowd was clearly behind Jeff here, I thought. Matt went right for the leg and attacked and targeted it. And I thought that became kind of the story, because JR and King kept, well, mainly JR, because King was clueless, but JR kept pointing out, you know, is Matt going to start being vicious in his attack? You know, he was working the leg, and they were kind of waiting for him to really start fucking his leg up instead of just kind of working it over. So that was part of the story, too. Like, was Matt going to snap and it really hurt Jeff's leg badly? And he did a little bit, but not too bad. I thought it was really bland. I thought it was way too grounded. I thought we were used to seeing them fly around. Did you feel the same way?
Absolutely, and I thought Lita as referee was a terrible idea.
Yeah, there was no need for to have
no, and it just ruined the flow. Instead of the two of them wrestling, Matt's too busy bitching to her about, you know, play it down the middle, and you're not, you know, they're not wrestling. They're too busy. Lita's the linchpin of the feud, apparently, and the match, and you're not really getting a good flow for them because they're too busy worrying about her.
Right.
And that wrecks the whole thing. Now, you knew this end was going to be screwy.
Well, did you feel like they were trying too hard to fit into a style of a match that is not accustomed to?
Well, yeah, they're doing like not submissions, but like, you know, ground holds, and you're like, what the fuck are you two doing? You're not Regal and Edge. And Edge was struggling with it.
It's almost like they didn't want to come out of the gate with a spot fest, though. Like, I don't know if it was because of the oversaturation of ladder matches or what, you know, garbage, and we had one coming up later, a hardcore match. I don't know if they felt they couldn't go all out. It's just a weird setting for these two.
Yeah,
just not, I don't know, not what you've expected. It was very choppy. You can almost feel them setting up the spots. That's what I felt too.
Well, the most hilarious one was when in the climax, Matt's trying to go for something on the top rope. Jeff throws him off, and Matt just kind of like lies there and then positions himself. You could see him positioning himself for Jeff Swanton. It's like,
they're setting up way, like, you could feel them thinking. They're just, again, almost like Edge, they didn't let their natural instinct control the match. They were trying too hard, and that's when things go wrong. You know, you hear about it in baseball all the time. When a guy thinks about where he's throwing is when he has the worst problems throwing. When you don't let your natural instinct take over, you can lead to trouble. So it almost looks like they're thinking too much about what they're supposed to do instead of just going out there and having their match. So that's the one we can ask Kevin about, if they were given kind of instruction to work a certain style or have a certain kind of match and they just were not feeling it, or if it was just them feeling the pressure of having this match. But Lita doesn't allow Matt to use the ropes. He gets pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, Jeff hits the Swanton, which to me was the highlight of the match. He really nailed it.
Yeah, he did nail it.
Then Matt gets his foot on the ropes, but Lita counts anyway. And as you said,
Jeff pulls his foot off.
Right, yeah, but it was there at one point and Lita missed
it. Yeah, and she doesn't notice. Yep.
But disappointing. Too much Lita drama, too slow. You know, not a bad match. I don't want to trash it and say it was garbage. It just wasn't. My expectations were high heading in. I thought they were really going to work a really fun, fast-paced match with each other. And even if you don't want to do a weapons, high-flying thing, you can still do a fast cruiser style. We've seen that earlier this year with guys like X-Pac and Kidman and Tajiri. And there's a way to do a fast-paced style without having to make it a weapons, weaponsy brawl.
I agree. Yeah. No, they did almost try too hard to not be themselves. That's what it was. They tried too hard to not be Team Extreme, and instead they were Team Mediocre. I don't know. It was just, they were trying too hard to not be themselves, and I think it wrecked the match. They should have just done what they do best, which is wing it, and it might have been a fun little train wreck of a match. Instead, they're trying to do this paint-by-numbers grappling thing with two guys that are 180 pounds soaking wet, and it's, just go at each other the way that you guys go at your opponents when you're a tag team. And I think you'll be fine. And don't worry about Lita. Too much Lita. I can't believe I'm saying that. King didn't think there was not enough Lita.
Well, she could have just been on the outside, not sure, like almost like Elizabeth, you know, not sure which corner to go in.
Right.
More than having to be the determining factor in the match. That was just, you know, maybe instead she ends up
screwing up Matt by accident, trips him up on the ropes or something. You know, they could have done something like that instead of having her be the ref. That was a little bit much. But yeah, the match is fine. Nothing special, but I would say very disappointing.
Yeah, no, definitely disappointing. Now, I mean, we'd see these two down the line, far down the line, but with a little more experience. But Jeff is clearly the guy that they think would be the singles guy with a longer lasting staying power. And that's why he won the match. That clearly there tells you, now, not that thing Matt's garbage or anything, but they really thought Jeff had the more bankable main event possibility. And that's why he won the match. But the match itself was not indicative of what they could do together or in singles, period.
Definitely not. No, definitely not. And you're right. I mean, I think Jeff was clearly the guy they were showcasing, even though, Matt was maybe more fleshed out as a character at this point, only due to the Lita stuff, and Jeff was more just a nut. That was kind of his gimmick.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
We'll see where they go with this, how it plays out going forward. But, not the best start for the Dudley, for the Hardy split.
Well, speaking of them,
I know,
we got
right,
them next.
I was looking ahead.
Yes, we got them next. Our next match, another title on the line, the World Wrestling Federation Tag Championships. I missed that. Must have been the Kane.
No, I think it was
champions.
It started to play Jesse or something like that. But.
Oh, okay. Your champions, the unifiers from Survivor Series, and that is Bubba Ray and D-Von, the Dudley Boys, taking on a team that I kind of dig the way they look. They're a cool kind of tag team.
There
you go. That's one of them. And then the guy who we always think, every month we're thinking to ourselves, how is he still with this company? Why do they keep giving him things to do? They would blossom as a team later on in their careers, maybe about 4 years later. Kane and the Big Show, which I always thought kind of visually was a neat looking team, just two big Goliath looking guys, taking on the pretty much 2001's tag team of the year. Although JR has another idea of who 2001's tag team of the year was, even though they only wrestled one match.
Yes.
I went into this match thinking, well, we could use a good, sloppy club strike fest. Mm. And that's kind of what we got. I mean, I wasn't blown away by it.
Oh, I don't know. It's just like, we're back on the Show and Kane carousel. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
throw them on and spin them around. They're going to come off as enemies. They're going to come off as friends. One's one, one's the other.
Splits
it's like, Jesus Christ. Like, we're right back to it. I mean, they've all, Show's been around since February 99. How many times have these guys fought or teamed already? In
almost
not
half
even
of,
3 years.
I think it's got to be almost half of Punk's Punk. Almost half of Big Show's run.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, it's like enough already with these guys. And,
yeah.
Show and Spike, they tried that. That fell apart. Show and Tajiri, that fell apart. It's like Show is just, they're desperately trying to find something for this guy to do. And he's working hard.
Mm-hmm.
But he seems like a lost soul. He seems aimless. They don't know what to do with him. He doesn't know what to do. But he's busting it. I mean, I think he's trying to prove that he's not lazy, that he's not fat, that it's just, he can't control what he is. And I don't know. It is he's so just played out. He's taking a break. I don't know. It's like, what else do you do at this point with him? I don't know. I have no idea what they could have done to salvage him at this point. But I thought the tag division has completely fallen apart at this point. The Hardys are gone. Edge and Christian are gone. Too Cool's gone. The Dudleys have been dominant on top. And really, they've almost built the Dudleys up so strong that they almost feel like a super team's come together. Like, sometimes you get like Taker and Rock or... when Taker and Kane have the titles earlier, you get these guys that come together as a team to win the titles that feel bigger than the division. I think the Dudleys are getting there.
Yeah, and
I feel like they lost their peers.
They did, and now the rest of the division is what's your other team?
It's sloshed together teams.
Hippos,
yeah,
I mean.
It is. It's sloshed together teams that aren't actual units. You know what I mean? It's just a weird. It just sucks to see what the tag division has become because it was really, really fun for a while there.
It's almost like they're holding out. I mean, obviously, common sense was going to tell you at the time that a lot of the Alliance guys were going to come back at some point in the next 4 or 5 months to kind of, get a lot of good guys, Kidman and Lance Storm and, guys like, I thought Canyon, guys like that, they were going to come back at some point. We need bodies.
Mm-hmm.
So this was almost like a holding pattern of, mid-card
slot.
Right,
you put DDP and Canyon back together as a tag team.
Yeah.
Here. Why not? They're not doing anything. You could have rebuilt the division, like you said, with some of those ECW, WCW guys. I mean, even a guy like Justin Credible, you can give him someone.
I hate to say this, but you know who would have been a in a good position here, even though your boys probably would have been in a good spot here. Need teams.
The Quebecers?
No. Yes, exactly. No. Talking about your one named unforgiven monsters. No. Would he have managed them?
Yes.
No.
That would be pretty awesome. Led to the ring by their manager, Art Donovan.
Been a fatter Albano with no hair. A big Hawaiian shirt on.
No, I seriously, see now I want to see Art Donovan coming down the ring, leading them down.
Why didn't they just keep him around? Did that match? I mean, if you look back,
well,
JR,
maybe,
and I'm
well,
not saying this
to everyone but
find
Chad.
The theme's funny, but
yeah. But
why not?
Well, I think they would have brought them back up. I think Clark got impatient, didn't want to go down to Memphis. I mean, Adams went, Clark didn't want to go. So what are they going to do? He left. He forced their hand. At the time, maybe you could have said they could have stayed up there, but they obviously wanted them to go back
How
down
about
for
Testing
a reason.
Adams. How about that for
I
a
like
team?
Testing Christian. I didn't think that was a bad team.
I like Testing Christian too, but
and
see,
I liked Testing Booker in the fall too. Like, I thought that was a pretty good team.
But my point is, the reason I'm saying that is because you're going to have Adams as a singles guy.
No,
and you don't want to.
I think Test is better than that. That's all I'm saying.
I know,
but I don't
think
Christian
is too. But we've been talking the last few months about Christian.
How about Albert and Adams? Like, to me, that makes more sense.
That's kind of a wild team. Two big bruisers.
Like, Test, you can see the singles potential that they saw in him. I don't know if Albert had that yet. I think
True.
It's there, but I don't know if he had it yet. Him
Somebody,
and Adams might have
Adams could
sense.
Have had some size with. And yeah, no, I think Albert's fine. Not the same, though.
Call them the Jewish joints.
They start playing Horowitz's music again.
Well, now he should be their manager.
Artadano with a never mind. Artadanowitz. what's this thing on my head? No, never mind. Sorry. So, you know, there was a lot of options that they could have taken to at least stabilize the tag division until they could come up with some, either bring new guys in, you know, create some new guys from the Alliance dudes.
What do you mean I can't eat the salami?
I like ham and cheese hoagies, you know. So that's a problem. I think they were a little impatient. Not impatient. How do I word it? They, knowing that they probably had a big cachet of guys that they're going to go back to. I just can't see our doctor walk up the ramp with this music playing. All right, here we go. God. He does have a shirt kind of like Renzi. Anyway, so I think the problem was knowing that they had the... I'm thinking... What are people... Run. Imagine a rock version of that. No, they can have to do that. They can have Johnny do a cover of it. Imagine, I don't want to go any further. I don't want to totally offend any of our fine Jewish listeners, but they could ask Fred Durst to do a Abba de Gila cover.
Oh, Jesus.
Or Crowning Pool or something. I mean, all those bands are there. Cover everything else.
I did it all.
Oh, Jesus.
I did it all for the motto. What? The motto. What? So you could take that Hava and shove it up your what?
I did it all for Gefilte. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry. All right. In any event, getting back to the point. The point is they had all these guys over the next 4 or 5 months that were obviously going to come back. You know, the Lance Storms and guys like that. So the tag division did seem very unstable. And the Dudleys obviously were the one stable team. And they weren't thinking of breaking them up for at least, you know, probably a couple more years. If they ever had thoughts of it. Well, at least a year, obviously. And then they were thinking about them too.
Chocolate yarmulke and the hot dog flavored matzah.
Yes, Artadano pushing out a cart, pushing out a hot dog cart. Oh God! All right, So there you go. So
we're
in any
rolling,
event.
We're rolling, rolling kosher meat. We're rolling, rolling, rolling kosher meat.
Oh, Lord. Ugh. All right. Yeah. So the Dudleys, the match itself is usual for big guy shit. Nothing great. And Dudleys win it when Kane gets taken out outside the ring. And eating lots of gefilte. And what's the word I'm thinking of? Not leapfrog. They like whip Big Show into an exposed turnbuckle.
Well, they basically gave him like a 3D.
Yeah, they 3D. That's right. They 3D'd him into the exposed, you know, turnbuckle ring. They had unhooked it earlier in the match. Mm-hmm. They get the pin, and the Dudley boys retain the tag titles.
I mean, it was an RA power match, but to me, Dudley's, they clearly need a team to engage with, and they need a hot team. Outside of the Hardys, they really haven't had like a hot challenge, you know. They had the Show into Jerry and our Show and Kate. Like, they haven't really fought a team that the fans could dig into and get behind against them. So
it's,
I
like
mean,
Show and insert guy here.
And Show's still a fucking loser even after this match. Like, he gets pinned again. It's like, Jesus, all right, see you later, thanks for coming.
Excellent. Punch,
we've now blown three fucking tag title matches on four pay-per-views, so we're done with you, thanks.
Keep punching the checks.
Another loser.
A 10-year contract.
Yeah, just, I don't know, just
so bad. All right, so the Dudley boys retain the World Wrestling Federation Tag Team titles. All right. I think you and I are...
you gotta have
some difference
faith
of opinion here.
I'm gonna spin the straddle. We'll get you eight Hanukkah gifts.
Oh my God, I cannot wait till Barry Horowitz goes into the Hall of Fame. It's gonna be so great. Who would induct him? Chronic?
Fred Nurse.
Artadano? Well, it can't be Candido, because... No. Sadly, Candido's the guy that made his career, I suppose. So, imagine the place blasting whatever arena. It's crazy. All right, anyway. Okay, another title match here, but okay. Let's talk about...
sex, baby.
Salami. What? All right. We have two... it's a two-pronged story here.
It is.
We've got the guy who's champion, your World Wrestling Federation hardcore champion, Chris Lee Burr himself, of course, Rob Van Dam, and his opponent. Now, before you, we were chatting a bit in pre-production. I have a feeling you're wondering what I'm disagreeing with you about. It's not this character move. It's what went after it. But tell everyone what happened in this situation.
All right. Yeah. There's a lot here that I think we may disagree with. And I know that you're fine with the character move, but we'll talk about the match too. So the night after Survivor Series, Vince debuted his Kiss My Ass Club. People would have to literally kiss his ass to stay in the WWF after the invasion. That night, it was turncoat William Regal, and Vince was still a babyface for the most part, but after his return to being a heel, he started picking on faces to join the club. On the November 26th Raw in Oklahoma City, Vince wanted Jim Ross to kiss his ass, and that brought up The Undertaker. He said he was about to beat Vince's ass, and he asked JR if he's going to kiss Vince's ass, and JR says, oh no, hell no, I'm not going to kiss his ass. And then out of nowhere, Taker says, what do you think, you're better than me? No one's kissed his ass more than I have over the last 10 years. Does that mean, you know, I'm not as good as you are if you're not going to kiss his ass? And I did. And Taker attacks JR, shoves his face in Vince's ass, says he's going to start commanding respect from everyone, and that was his new hook. So he officially turned heel. For a few weeks, had kind of the same look, but about the week before the show, cut his hair very short and gave himself an absolute complete makeover. So... gone are the leopard skin pants and the fat man singlet, and now it's definitely more of a streamlined look. And you know, it was kind of deceiving because of the coat and everything he was still wearing. He got himself into pretty good shape pretty quickly here.
Yeah, he did lose the nacho cut.
I mean, he still had it a little bit, but not like he had you know, earlier in the year or even the end of 2000.
Right. No, he definitely lost a lot of the nacho gut. There's no doubt about that. I thought it was very refreshing. I did like the logic in the heel turn. Now JR would say,
oh, I love
constantly
the logic. Yeah.
JR would constantly say, though, you know, who's hasn't given him respect. And then this is where Lawler like doesn't,
right.
He's thrown in the towel about trying to put storyline logic together. It's like, who's giving him respect, JR? Well, I think everybody. What? And then move on to puppies or something. It's just so, yeah.
he didn't get the stories over nearly as well as Heyman had been.
Yeah.
Hey, this is an angle I thought Heyman would have been very good with. Putting over the history of Taker and all the disrespect he's gotten.
I agree.
I'll take a minute just to say this is the match that Chad Campbell did his previewing for. So it's up at PlayStimulation.com right now. Did a very good review. And I think he was very surprised by this match. I think he liked it a lot more than he expected to heading in. And this is one I liked a lot more. Again, I always liked it, but watching it again here over the last couple of days, I really enjoyed it. And I thought Taker desperately needed this makeover. Like, badly. I thought he needed to go heel badly. I thought he needed the change bad. I thought the short hair was great. And I really liked this feud and matchup. I thought it was really unique. It was a good spot for RVD. Like, you have Taker, who still is out-popping him a little bit. He almost out-cheers him. But RVD's pops are right there with him. So it was a good challenge for RVD. Could he hang with a guy like Taker? And more importantly, could he carry Taker? Because remember, heading into this match, we haven't seen Taker have a good match in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So could RVD be the guy who gets him there? I mean, maybe people think not, just due to RVD's kind of a looser style and not a guy known for carrying other people. He can hang in a spot fest, but could he carry a guy like Taker, who has just been sloppy for most of the year? But again, I thought Taker looked to be in better shape. I thought he was moving better, too. He was really fast right off the bell, kind of bouncing around the ring with RVD. I thought that was kind of cool. Did you catch that, too?
Yes, I did. I did. I like the match a lot, but I think my one problem is something we've been talking about since the beginning, at least since RVD's arrival in July. You said to me back at No Mercy that you thought that putting him in that match and having him job to Austin was killing his buzz. I think that now with the invasion over and the whole stigma of him being in the Alliance, and as awesome as he was and as aloof as he was and as 420 as he was, now that that storyline is not lingering or hanging over his head, he could just be RVD. This was the wrong time to stick him here with a guy who, even though the character change was awesome, you didn't need RVD to have to justify it.
I don't know. I kind of like it, though. Oh, let's talk about the match. Let's get to the theory behind it.
The match is great.
Yeah, it's really fun. They brawl in the crowd. And I thought it was cool seeing Taker in this environment. Like, we haven't seen a lot of this. We started with Triple H a little bit, but not like a hardcore-ish feel to it.
Mm.
And I loved Taker's drunken heel spells. As RVD's hitting him, and he's like got like this like crazy eyes and weird looking drunk face, and he's stumbling around. I thought his offense was great too. A real like asshole moveset he had developed. Just being a real dick about what he was doing,
kicking you in the head, and
putting, I loved
going for pins by shoving your. He does like Regal. He shoves his forearm in your face, and
it was great. He just did a 180 completely.
Yeah,
and I loved. God.
No, finish your point.
I loved when they go to the balcony. And it was nondescript. It was like a storage area. It was gritty looking. It reminded me very much of ECW. RVD goes up top and he does the point to his, does the point to his shoulders and dives off into Taker. And the crowd's going nuts. And I just loved how gritty and not polished it looked. Because we're so used to now seeing the nice sets and everything else. And they found this one corner of the arena that looked very much like the ECW arena.
Mm. Yes, good point. Good point. Do you think maybe backstage... And this isn't documented. In fact, I might write this down. I'm going to write this down after our show to ask Kevin on Wednesday. You think Taker just didn't like the invasion storyline and kind of mailed it in? And now it's like, all right, the invasion's over. Now I can go back. We can go back to doing real stuff. And now he's energized. Do you think he didn't like the whole?
No, I don't think
WCW thinks kind of dogged it.
I don't think so. I think he just was maybe bored by it. I don't know if he didn't not like it. I think he was just. I don't think he had a reason to. You know what I mean? I think he could coast in the role. He was one of the faces in the promotion. He had his world title run earlier in the year going after Austin. And I think he just kind of settled and got complacent. I don't think he didn't like it. I just thought he got comfortable in his role. And now they needed a top heel to step in. And they did because, Austin's back to being a face. And Rock is a face. And now, Angle and Jericho are great heels, but they're not completely proven. So putting Taker on the heel side, I thought, gave them kind of a legitimate name.
Mm-hmm. I just didn't like having RVD, who now, with the Alliance off his back, you can really start to elevate him. And how about... I'm trying to think of a guy that you could have stuck in here that wouldn't have... That Taker still could have legitimized and helped his character, but at the same time, you could have sacrificed the babyface and not hurt anything. I was going to say Regal, then I realized...
Yeah, but it would have been the same. Like, I don't know. RVD was over... And made sense in this style of match. Like, I just feel like Taker just pummeling another guy wouldn't have made sense. Or wouldn't have worked as well.
But why would... Why would jobbing to Austin, who was the champion,
that was his first loss. At, that was his first loss.
Well, he's going to have a first loss at some point.
Yeah, but no, I mean, he didn't have to. He didn't have to then. To me,
why would he have to here?
Why put him in a world title match? He's not going to win at that point. That's my problem.
But why feed him to Taker when you could have put?
Because it wouldn't have been as good, and you're trying to get Taker over as a major heel, so he beats a top face, and then you build RVD as, and you had to get the hardcore title off him anyway, to be honest. But I don't know, because
that's the only thing.
But he goes down fighting in this one. Like, I mean, the battering ram where Taker drives his head into the fucking steel grating was gross. The bump on the great finish, the choke slam through the tables, and I don't know. Like, this was a you know, back, like, anyone could have won this one. RVD gave Taker a really good match, and you know, you kind of look at it, did Taker expect RVD to hang with him like this? Probably not. He's almost, like, shocked at the end, and this almost starts that little respect gimmick that he'd get going, where he'd kind of show respect to his opponent. I thought it was cool to have Taker as a hardcore champ, because you didn't expect it. I figured RVD would win here, but I thought Taker had been reborn, and this was a good chance to really establish him as a top heel with his new look and music, and to me, RVD, the damage had been done already. I felt like he, in the eyes of the fans, he wasn't, but he felt like just another guy already, kind of, to me. I don't know. I don't think a win here would have completely undone the damage that we saw in October.
I don't know about that. I'm not saying that RVD should have won. Whoever Taker faced in this match to put over the heel turn is fine. I just don't think it should have been RVD. I think at a time where you need to kind of get back from what happened at No Mercy, which
yeah,
I don't
but
think
who else can you put Taker? Too. Yeah, who else can you put Taker over that's going to make it as good or as big a deal? I mean, give me another face on the card, and I'll argue it with you. I'll discuss it with you, but I can't think of anyone. I mean, you got Edge tied up with other things. He's the closest, probably, in stature. I mean, he's already run through like Booker.
Yeah,
not gonna do Kane again. Not gonna do fucking Big Show again. Not gonna really do the Hardys. They're busy. I mean, who else is there right now that's on RVD's level? That
you could
see, to me, this is a match that elevated.
Let's put it this way: if they would have hesitated on the Matt and Jeff split, you could have had Jeff in this match.
Yeah, I still don't think it would have been as great, but yeah, you could have. RVD, this was a perfect blend of styles, and it somehow magically worked out to be a really great match. And I don't think the trade-off was worth saying, let's put Jeff in there to save RVD. To me, the RVD ship had sailed on the point of him being, he could be rebuilt, but it's not as urgent anymore. Like, to me, he was red mega hot in October. And you can have him in that match, but you don't have him take the pin. There was no reason for him to take the pin against Austin at No Mercy. And to me, that put the chink in his armor and knocked him down just a little bit in my eyes. And then you put him in that match in Survivor Series. He goes out kind of early. And then, I don't know, now he's just like another face on the roster. To me, he's not that mega level star anymore. Because you've already established that Austin, Rock, Jericho, Angle are all above him anyway on the depth chart. That's been proven.
Well, they are above him on the depth chart. But the point is
right. But so it doesn't matter at this point, because you're not pushing him down anymore. You've already done that. You've already put him in the spot. So what, losing to Taker in a hardcore match after hanging with him step by step is not a bad thing.
I don't think you're giving Austin enough credit as a guy who's the face of the company, and in a big title match, you know, RVD hung with him and could have won the title. It was a couple of spots.
Yeah, but
and then
he was still undefeated at that point. The magic was still there. I mean, it's like Goldberg. Look at Goldberg. Okay. So Goldberg, undefeated, has this magic behind him. The crowd fucking loves him. He loses a match he really shouldn't have lost. The next month, if he loses to Bam Bam Bigelow in the... Well, he did, didn't he? Didn't he lose that fucking taser match, or did he win that thing? When Scott Hall came out and tased him?
He tased
Bigelow by accident, right?
Hall tased him at Starrcade, and that's how Nash won.
Oh, that's right, and then he fought... Did he fought Hall in the taser? I thought he fought Bigelow in the next...
Let me double check.
Sold out. Or was it Hall? Whatever. My whole point is, if Goldberg would have lost the next month, right, and then they rebuilt him, would you have thought that they blew it?
If they had him lose,
he lost to Nash, right? So the magic is gone.
At Sold Out 99, he beat Scott Hall in the Stun Gun match. Right. That was the main event.
All right, so say he loses that match.
Well, if he loses that match, then yeah, you've killed him.
Oh, so that's
but
it?
Don't forget, but at that point, Goldberg had already been champion for a good amount of time.
So maybe not the best
comparison.
He was building
2 years. You're only talking about like 4 months.
Right.
RVD.
No, well, not really. I mean, he had the ECW cred all behind
him.
Well,
all right. If you're talking about in general, yeah.
Well, yeah, because that was a crowd that followed him and loved him. I mean, it was clear, right? I mean, it wasn't the WWF kids that were into him after week one. I mean, who do you think gave him the huge pop at Invasion?
Mm.
I mean, this is a name guy. It's like it was some guy no one ever heard of.
He actually beat Bigelow at Super Bowl IX.
Okay, I knew he fought him at some point.
Yeah, and then...
Anyway, my whole point is that I don't think the one... once that cat's out of the bag, once you lose that first big match, to me, then that's when you kind of become another guy. Like, there's just no reason to have him there if he wasn't going to win. To me, they missed the gravy train early on. And this loss here is easily rehabbable, more than the guy's first loss. You can never get that
first loss.
You can never get the first loss back. You can't get it back. Once it's gone, it's gone.
Capacity. You're talking about the main event.
It didn't have to yet, though. It doesn't. Yeah, but what? A throwaway pay per view that everyone just wanted to get the fucking Invasion. I mean, you're talking like it was WrestleMania that he lost to Austin.
Well, no, but I mean, you're also talking about
a shit pay per view that was buried between Survivor Series that was coming up, and we even talked about that show, how it felt very flat because no one completely cared about the Invasion at that point. I mean, it's not like he was like the. If they had positioned him as a savior of the alliance and he outworks all the savior of WWF, he jumps ship and he's like the big. I mean, he was just like a third guy they put in there and then he eats the pin against Angle, had already lost a million times to Austin anyway. It just made no sense. The train had left the station at that point.
I think you're being a little. I think you're being a little cynical about RVD in general.
No, but I think you're acting like he lost to Albert on the show.
I mean, no, but I mean, you're talking about a guy who.
Yeah, but he's still a star in the eyes of the fans. Just because we hated his fat ass and his work rate throughout 2001 doesn't mean that he's not positioned as a mega star.
No, I mean, it is Taker, and the heel turn was cool. I just would have been nice to – I think RVD could have used
I'll put it this way. Would a win have really helped RVD? Yes. I don't think a loss hurts him, though.
I don't think RVD should have been in this match at all. I think you could have put him
in like it, though, because I'd rather have him in a big match like this with Taker. To me, once you lose that first match – you can lose a couple, and it doesn't matter as much. It's not like he's jobbing left and right at this point. My beef was that he lost the first big match, and that killed his momentum a little bit. And now at this point, all right, once you already lost to Austin, who cares if you lose to Taker? You can rebuild him from there. If this was his first loss, I would be with you 100%. But to me, the magic had already left the bag.
Well, I mean, we had already said at No Mercy that I didn't think RVD should have been in that match to begin with.
Right,
I think
yeah.
He should have been in the match with Rock. And won the WC. They should have struck the iron there big time.
He should have done anything else but lose that match. There was no need to. Get the Invasion over with, and then you keep the skyrocket going.
Mm.
To me, once they dulled him with that match, and it's Survivor Series, I mean, big deal. He loses to Taker in a great brawl. I mean, it's not... It's like he lost in a six-minute TV match. You know what I'm saying? It's I don't know.
Well, that I will. That I'll concede that at least it wasn't like a squash.
It was a great match. I mean, he hung with him the whole way. I mean, right up until the end. It took a huge move to take him out. A choke slam off the stage through tables. I mean, it's not. He didn't just pin him with a right hand. I mean, it was a real fight. I mean, he hung with him left and right. So to me, the loss here is fine because he's already lost once. So we're not feeling that lack of something. You know, like oh god, I can't believe they finally beat RVD. It's like all right. RVD's already been established as maybe the third top babyface, if that, in the promotion. Right. And he just hung toe-for-toe with The Undertaker, is starting a big heel turn. You know, this could have been a spot where we get Taker Angle from Fully Loaded over again, where he just squashes him to launch his new push. But he gave RVD a lot. So I just don't think it hurts RVD as much as you think it did. I thought the damage had already been done to what could have been their next huge guy. I think they didn't see what was coming. With like Austin maybe breaking down and losing a little bit of his cachet or sachet, as some say, and how badly they needed new. You think they would have learned something in June? How badly they needed new blood on top on the face side, and they had it just handed to them in RVD, and they ignored it. I mean, it's similar. I know we don't get to current stuff here a lot, but you know, it's right, comparable to Daniel Bryan in a few ways. You know, just because we didn't hate Austin, like you know, everyone can't stand Cena and Orton at this point. Doesn't mean that it wasn't a huge missed opportunity.
Mm. Well, I think all along it should have. Incidentally, since you used that example, I've kept investigating. Goldberg up through Slamboree 99, which was May, hadn't lost a match. He beat Sting here.
All right, so all right, so he goes undefeated, and was he ever the same?
Probably not.
No, he wasn't.
I mean, the company gave a fuck anyway. But,
yeah, but was he ever the same in the fans' eyes? He's still over, but was he the same?
Well, no. No one's ever the same when you're
lose
not
on your first match.
Yeah.
Say it.
But that goes for anybody.
I know. That's my point.
Right. So what are you making the No Mercy match such a big deal for? All right. So he lost, but...
Because that's my point. You just said it. Once he loses that first match, it doesn't matter who is with you. Still lost. You're proving my point exactly. Because you're trying to write it off like, well, he lost to Austin, so it's not a big deal. I'm saying it doesn't matter who he lost to. He lost the first match. You just said it. You just said it yourself. It doesn't matter who you lose to. Once you lose that first match, that magic is gone. I don't care if it's Nash, Austin, Angle. It doesn't matter who it is.
Right. But what I'm saying to you back. Is, here was an opportunity to kind of get that out of... To kind of... With the invasion over with, and him now kind of his own solo star.
Yeah, but it's done. It doesn't matter.
And you're burying him, and he loses again.
You're not burying him. He didn't get buried. I don't know where you're getting this burying thing from. He lost a really competitive match on a sick move. I mean, that wasn't a bury.
I think the one thing that saves him is that the fans don't care. Same thing with the Hardys.
The fans don't care, so it's fine. But I'm saying you had that. All right. Say Taker lost his streak at WrestleMania 9, okay? And then he goes undefeated after that.
I figured you picked that one. I wonder
well,
why.
Well, whatever. Very nice. End of the streak. If he ended the streak at 9 or 10 or 11, wherever, and then went undefeated till then, it was 24-1. They booked him super strong after that, but that magic is gone, right?
Oh, well, you don't talk about it. There's no streak.
Well, say they do. Say just, they come back and say, wow, he's only lost one match.
It's like Sean. Well, then he has the Sean, right? He's Mr. WrestleMania, win or lose.
Right, but the magic is gone of the streak, right? Well, the magic of that undefeated run. What if I went to Tatanka, lost to Ludwig Borga, goddammit?
I knew you were going to go.
Took away a lot of his magic.
But that was different. Tatanka was a, you know, he didn't have the RVD cachet. It was just, right. He was just Tatanka.
All right, we got to move on but
all I'm saying is
this is one. Put it on the Kevin list. I want his take on this one.
Okay. This is a good match for us to talk about with him because there's a lot of things. I also really do think that Taker just gave – I don't say gave up. That's being unprofessional. But that's – and I don't think that's him. I just think he cruised through the invasion and just did – you know, instead of really – and that's why I think the matches were bad and he looked kind of blubbery. And I want to ask Kevin that if he thought that Taker kind of cruised because he was the only one – he really was the only one who looked awful every month. And I mean, Kane was great. Kane was great in that stretch before he hooked up with Taker, and then he became lazy looking. And notice, even with Big Show as his opponent, Kane looked energized in this match, the match before. So, I don't know. We'll talk to Kevin about it, but it's a good debate. In any event, Taker wins, which didn't upset me.
Good match. Let's move on.
In that part, I just thought.
All right, let's get to our next one, then we'll take a break here so we can relax. All right. This one we can move through a little bit quicker.
Yeah. Next up, we have another title match, your World Wrestling Federation women's title. By the way, but before we get to that, there was a segment earlier on that I commented with you today on our chat thread while I was watching it, that weird, very weird skit with Trish Stratus and Rock, which I thought was very awkward.
It was odd, yeah. He like goes backstage, and they had been teasing them a little bit on TV.
Yeah,
he goes back and like propositions her, and
well,
she
gives him a kiss. Yeah. Good luck, like kiss him on the cheek. Good luck from champion to champion, and he's like whoa, and then he starts doing the whole pointing his loins out and all that other. It was just very weird.
I feel like they were just trying to establish Trish as like a main event.
Yes, I agree.
Like they're trying to elevate the women's champion along with the other champions to say, you know, she's like the main eventer of the women. So this is like the little clique, the main event people. It's Austin, Rock, Trish. They can all fucking have fun and whatever. You know, it's a one big friggin' orgy.
Yeah, pretty much. So anyway, speaking of Trish, your World Wrestling Federation women's champion, which she won at Survivor Series in that six pack, taking on one of the one of the women in that six pack, Jacqueline, former champion.
Now you didn't seem to care about Jackie when we talked to Survivor Series, so you didn't really seem very high on her ivory.
I don't care either, and the match is not good.
Well, it was an odd choice, but I thought it was fine to work with Trish because you don't want to put her in there. You know, we talked about the mistake of maybe having Lita involved, you know. So you don't want to put in anyone that is going to overshadow her, outwork her. Not that Jackie wasn't a better worker than Trish. She was at this point. But Jackie's someone that's unselfish and knows how to work a match to put someone else over. Does that make sense? So it's not someone who's going to go out there and steal the offense from Trish or make her look stupid. You wanted a pro in there to get Trish over, and a guy that a lady that the fans didn't really give a shit about. So they didn't really care if Jackie was in this match.
No, I don't think so either.
And that was perfect. That's what you needed here. Because Trish is still learning.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
She's learning on the fly.
She pretty much sacrificed on camera the entire year. I mean, she slapped Vince at Mania. And then you don't really see her again pretty much till... I mean, she was in and out of the Invasion storyline. But you really don't see her much till the fall when we reestablished the belt.
Well, I know she got injured a little bit. And then she was off training to get in the ring. So, like you said, sacrificed the year to really... learn her craft, and Jackie worked stiff here, and I thought that was good. Trish kind of gets a lesson there, and she's still hesitant. You can see her hesitate before big moves, but she's learning on the fly. I mean, it was a tough position. She had to develop in the spotlight. It's tough love, but it was effective, and it leads to some rough outings for a while. I'd say almost a year's worth of really hard, hard matches that she's in, and I thought it was just a nothing match, but really another piece of her development, and Jackie did her job to put Trish over, and it's almost like we're going to watch her over the next year learn on the fly. And learn in the ring as we're going.
Right.
It was like they threw out there and said, you know what? We don't care. We know it's going to be a fucking mess. But by the end of this, it's going to be worth it.
Right. And it's true. It's absolutely true. And I mean, honestly, Trish really didn't fit anywhere in the Invasion anyway. I mean, it wasn't like she was missed or anything in that aspect. It's not like she would have added anything more to what already was there. So it was nice. It was good for her to be able to really focus on getting in the groove getting down the ins and outs of being in the ring, and that was fine. That worked out well for her. So there you go. So Trish Stratus retains her WWF Women's Championship. All right, why don't we take a break, because the last three matches pretty much are all one big package. This undercard, what do you think? A little disappointing, except for Taker. The match, not the decision, the match is excellent, for me anyway. But the undercard overall is, what do you think, a little flat?
Yeah, I'd say just a little bit. I mean, I don't think it's bad by any means. I mean, it's fine. The crowd's hot. It's been okay. Shows like this are really tough because they're reestablishing so much.
Right, and I mean, historically, December pay-per-views are usually hit or miss anyway. People aren't into it. You know, Christmas is coming, buying gifts. A lot of people, you know, the buy rate's 0.78, so not everybody bought the show. Usually you wait till the tape comes out or whatever, or DVD. So, you know, not that big a deal. But when we come back, we will get into really the meat and potatoes of why this show was put together, and we'll give you a little background on why and how, and the big players of who is the real world champion. But first, a word. RVD says because.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week, placetobenation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
What's that?
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on PlaceToBeNation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pop. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vanderberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
What's your one-stop home? for your pop culture needs. Of course, PlaceToBeNation.com. We have everything you could ask for when it comes to pop culture. Now first, wrestling. We're definitely your hookup for all show recaps, including Raw, SmackDown, Impact, Ring of Honor, all of WWE's other programs as well. We have previews, live blogs, breakdowns for all WWE and UFC pay-per-views. You want sports? No problem. Place to Be Nation has extensive articles on football, basketball, MMA, boxing, and baseball. From Andrew Reich's history lessons to the return of the hack to the Cowboys call, we have the best and comprehensive sports knowledge and opinions. With a loaded staff of hardcore pop culture writers, we also specialize in comics, TV, music, movie pieces. Of course, you can't forget Jen and Justin's journey through the 90s. You want podcasts? Well, look no further than Place to Be Nation, the home for the best catalog and variety of shows you'll find anywhere on the net. There's the Place to Be podcast, where the big boys play, the Brad and Chad show, Wrestling with the Past, Titans of Wrestling, Goodwill Wrestling, Richard and the Mailman, Grapple Talk, and the Kings of Sport with our good friend Nate Milton. Want to take a second to thank our supporters and ask you to check out their great sites. Graham Cawthon and the History of WWE.com, a complete archive of wrestling shows throughout history. Also, our friend Dave at TWFNews.com, your home for wrestling news updates and great conversation. Also, check out PiledriverWrestling.net for all the latest wrestling news and the home of the great Old School Wrestling Review podcast and much more. And while you're at it, if you want to chat with fellow fans about wrestling's past and present, check out Scott Keith's blog at RSPWFAQ.com. So for everything you need, your pop culture fix, check out PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in the pop culture world.
Hey, this is Ed Banger Thrasher, and you're listening to Where... What the fuck is it? The Place to Be podcast, so you better not miss it, because I'm on it.
All right, Nation, we're back here, and it is time to give you your update on the PlaceToBeNation.com website. Chad Campbell did his Vintage Vault previewing for Vengeance 2001, looked at Undertaker versus RVD, and he had a great take on it as well. So if you didn't get enough arguing on this show, you can head over there and read Chad's take. We had a new episode of the Hard Traveling Fanboys. They looked at Off the Page, Arkham Origins. Greg and Nick wrote up that piece looking at Arkham Origins, as I said, as of course you know, they are great with their comics knowledge, and we have another great comics roundtable coming, Scott, our monthly edition with the whole comic staff, Tim Capel, Greg, Nick, Todd Weber, and Russell Sellers. So definitely check that out. Will be great, as always, later this week. Scott Keith was back with a few rants coming off the network, and one of the biggest ones he did was the first ever SmackDown from August 26th, 1999. And you can also check out, he did Raw from 9/27/98 as well. Those are both up under Scott Keith's tag on PlaceToBeNation.com. Jeremy Nichols is back in the House of Horror looking at Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Next Generation. We had all your recaps over the weekend by Ring of Honor, Superstars, Main Events. They're all there for you, as always, and of course, all the way back to your Raw. Nate Milton's Impact recap, along with his predictions for last night's Lockdown pay-per-view. Nate, of course, knows his TNA very well. So if you're into TNA, check out TNA. Kevin Kelly's show, Scott. Last week we had Mike Bennett on. We only played about maybe 25 minutes or so of the interview on air. Him and Kevin talked for 50 minutes. And we aired that whole interview over the weekend on the website. It's there as its own separate file. So check that out. Kevin and Mike Bennett, they talk about BJ Whitmer's neck injury. They talk about Bennett's WWE tryout and the inherent flaws in that system. Kind of take some shots, him and Kevin, about the way they developed their talent in the world of wrestling entertainment. And they talk about his career, his relationship with Maria, and some of his political views and different other things as well. So it was a really cool interview. Kevin and Mike Bennett, check that out. PlaceToBeNation.com exclusive. There, we also had a new edition of the Main Event, Scott, the fourth one with you and the boys, Aaron George stepping in for Steve Willey. You talked about the WWE Network, you talked about NXT, you talked about Elimination Chamber fallout and where they're headed into Mania. So another great episode. I really enjoy listening to it today. 2 hours that fly by with a lot of good characters and some latent racism mixed in as well. So a lot of fun, a lot of fun in that.
Yes.
if you're an MLS fan, and who isn't, Todd Gessling previewed the new upcoming season here with his full MLS preview for the 19th season already, Scott. Can you believe this shit?
Wow. Next it's like arena football.
Yeah, next year they're significantly expanded the league. So Steve Willey and Glenn Butler were back with the high spot. They looked at Paul Bearer's Hall of Fame announcement, the other top stories of the week, more CM Punk, as always. And Scott, we were back in the Vintage Vault written. SummerSlam 2008, our written review is up on PlaceToBeNation.com. So if you like our written reviews, our old bread and butter, That's there for you as well. And, of course, Scott Keith's NXT review as well. All right. Also, Todd Gessling looked back at part two of his Trash TV Attitude Era retrospective. So part one and two are now up. And Andrew reached to a piece on tanking in the NBA. So there's your PlaceToBeNation.com update. Please visit once, visit often. You can visit us at info@PlaceToBeNation.com via email there if you want to send us a sample or submission to get involved. You can also reach out on Facebook, PlaceToBeNation, Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation and PlaceNumber2BeNation on Twitter. There you go, Schmuck. Happy birthday. All right, Scott, where are we?
All right. It's time now to dive into the what really is the meat and potatoes of this show, and that means, of course, the tagline for this show, Vengeance 2001, was four men, three matches, two belts, one undisputed champion.
Two 500s, two 100s, 620s, and five of everything
else. Yes. Excuse me, sir, can you give me some scratch-offs? Yes. Sure, you were tired of those questions. Speaking of, I got to bring you, even if you give the winnings to Little G, Connecticut does have a Hartford Whalers scratch-off.
There you go.
You can play your little brass bonanza in the background. All right, anyway, so when Ric Flair arrived as co-owner of the company, the belts went back to their respective guys. Mm-hmm. Well, Rock had the WCW world title, which they cut off. It was now just called the World Championship.
Mm-hmm.
The WCW was gone. Austin, of course, that night took back his belt because technically he never lost it.
Right.
And Flair let him back in because he was champion. So.
Well, things, the worm turned on SmackDown that week after Flair returned. He wanted to combine the two titles and have one undisputed champion by having Austin and The Rock face each other straight up in Vengeance. And I remember being going crazy, thinking, holy shit, they're doing this here? Austin, Rock, unification, they're not saving this for Mania?
I know, yeah.
Vince came out, shits on the idea, and said instead there should be a mini-tournament with Angle taking on Austin, Rock taking on Jericho, the kind of the four big guys at the end of the year that had been feuding over the titles, and the two winners would meet afterwards for the Undisputed title. Flair agreed, and then we get that awesome opening fantastic montage that we talked about earlier. To open the show here with the featured of all the champions from the past and building to the importance of the merger. What did you think? Too soon? Should they have done Rock Austin? Should they have saved this for Mania? Did you like the way they did it? I mean, we're just 3 weeks after Survivor Series, a huge show. A huge show. And now you're following up 3 weeks later after the death of WCW officially with already a title unification. Should they have waited till Mania?
I think and I'm not just saying this because of who it is, but I think the wild card in this whole equation was Triple H. And when he was coming back, and he obviously was going to be pushed back up to the main events. So you've got five guys then, and two belts. And you had the Rumble. You got to take that into consideration too. The Rumble is, you're guaranteed a title shot. So that adds another wrench in the mix. I think, to be honest with you, JR, look, these guys get paid to write storylines, so I'm not going to bail them out, but I don't know how streamlined that storyline would have been when you take into account, four guys is neat and tidy, but then you throw Triple H in the mix. You know he's got to be elevated when a guy comes back from injury and, obviously you're not sure whether he'll be – usually they come back as a face regardless of how they left. And then you got the Rumble coming up the next month in Chad's backyard. So I think there were too many variables to just dump a unification at WrestleMania unless then you have another huge return coming as well, which we'll talk about in February. And that, I'm sure that was already being discussed. I think the problem there was too many variables between now and March 17th would have made that too hard.
Mm-hmm. That's I'll give you that. We're a little too far away.
Yeah. And there's a lot of things behind the scenes being discussed. Yeah, in a perfect world, fuck yeah. Unification, two belts, 75,000 at Skydome. Hell yeah, I'd have gone all over that. But the problem is you had three variables. You had Triple H returning at some point. A lot of people thought it was at the show, so he was obviously close. Number two, you got the Rumble, a number one contender slot anyway. And number three, another guy who we're not going to get into for a couple shows, but obviously he was being talked about too, and putting him at Mania obviously totally changes things up. So I think there was a lot of variables that make it more difficult than just saying, all right, we'll just wait till Mania and then have the unification there. I wish it was that easy, believe me, because unifications rock. Tournaments are even cooler. But unfortunately, I think there was too wide a gap for things to get fucked up. You know what I mean? It's kind of like we've talked about so many times, and we'll just continue to discuss throughout the rest of, you know, throughout our vault life, where you want.
So you're fine with the tournament setup?
Yeah, I am.
Okay,
I am right now. Yeah, I know it seems rushed. You're right. In a you know, wow, 3 weeks and already we're doing unifications. Holy shit! I don't think they really. You know, the weird thing about the Attitude Era was, JR, when we get out of the Attitude Era, maybe we'll do a show and just talk about it in general. Maybe we'll have a roundtable about just the Attitude Era in general. But one of the things about the Attitude Era that always annoyed me, even though they're making a big deal out of the title, they never really made the title seem as special as it was before. Maybe it's because, look at 1999. There were like 11 WWF champions. You know what I mean? And I still think that was very prevalent. Even though Austin had a pretty extended reign in 2001. I mean, he had it from, you know, April 1st till March or September, whatever, whenever Unforgiven was. But the Attitude Era never lended itself to tradition or heritage. And only at WrestleMania 17, we had the gimmick battle royal, and we got to listen to Mean Gene and Bobby, which was awesome. Did history really start to show itself back into the product again? And I think the whole unification of belts, and you know, they're sticking Buddy Rogers and Flair and Sting in the open and everything. It's almost like they were trying to like bring history back so quickly because this needs to be special. But I think the fans were already ingrained, most of them, into thinking, the belts, whatever. Just give me good matches and boobs. Okay. You know, I think that's what was kind of ingrained in people's minds. I want to be optimistic like you that, wow, you know, what a cool moment it would be at Skydome March 17th. Two belts and all this. There's just too much stuff that would have made that complicated and they would have found a way to fuck it up. It's just my opinion. It's very cynical. But
should they have kept two belts, though?
You mean through
maybe
that
don't
stretch?
Don't even do it.
Yeah. I mean, you could have just had Kurt, Steve, and Rock Jericho and be done with it. And had one of them in the main event. And just skip the last match. Anyway, let's go through the order and then we'll explain. The first semifinal, if you will, is for the World Wrestling Federation Championship. Your champion, Stone Cold, who, JR, do you see him? Are you starting to see him breaking down at this point? Are you seeing it now? Do you think?
I saw it more at Survivor Series. I thought he actually looked a little bit refreshed here.
Okay. Do you think the face turn really?
No, because that feels played. So I think he just seems physically. It may as just the goatee and a little bit of rest, but. I thought it No Mercy in Survivor Series, especially actually, it was more No Mercy than Survivor Series. No Mercy, he seemed really beaten up. I don't remember the week to week TV if he was held back at all on TV at this point. He just seemed a little bit more refreshed here, and you know, he still takes a beating. I was gonna say he's not wrestling like Benoit in those matches like he had been, but he still Angle gives him a pretty good beating in this match. He definitely looks to be moving a little bit slower. I'll say that.
You definitely feel that. That he's. I think the whole combination with Vince again, you kind of feel like, all right, now we're back in like a regular groove, and you know, now this whole weird heel thing is over, and I'm very happy about that. But one feud that you know we've talked about numerous times could be feud of the year, concludes the year here, and.
It's almost a forgotten chapter in their feud. The roles are reversed for the first time with Angle being the heel and Austin the face for the first time in this feud. But kind of forgotten, you know? We always think about SummerSlam, we always think about Unforgiven.
Right.
And you kind of forget this one here. Austin's right back to his old music, super over. So it really was like the Dallas dream, you know?
Yes.
Like we snap the fingers, JR comes out of the shower, and we move on. Not Jim Ross, please. But.
Baby's got Like a deep blue sea.
It was either that or the Go-Go's. I figured I went with a little Elton. I don't even know if either of them have blue eyes. Probably not. Well, I know you don't.
Austin does, right?
Yes. I'm sure Kurt does. Who knows? Maybe he goes with his tights. All right, anyway. So, yeah, this is one that – and I really like this match. It's a little – I will say, though, I think we were spoiled – by the invasion tension at like SummerSlam and Unforgiven. I thought that the juice for that match helped it through the stratosphere.
Right. So and yeah, this is still good.
But now you got regular face Austin and heel Angle, which is not terrible, but there's not that extra
Plus we've seen it so many times.
Well, that too, yeah.
So that's taken away from it as well. So JR, I thought was pretty good here. He goes through all the history of the titles for all the different unification matches we've seen throughout history.
Right.
Austin has dominates for a while. I thought the dynamics are a little weird, and like you said, lack the intensity, even though the stakes are higher, arguably. Austin's less manic and obsessive in his movements. Did you notice it's pretty impressive that he was able to go right back to where he was before the heel turn. Like, all of a sudden, all the manic pace and the obsession with how he was attacking were gone.
Yeah, and the weird looks in his face. Like, it's like he's back to wrestling in 99 again, you know?
He's just back to the old Austin. Angle went right to the leg and starts using the suplexes, and Austin just continues to take a beating in these matches throughout 2001. And then Austin busts out a whole series of Germans, too, on Angle, and I thought the finishing sequence was good, and Austin goes over clean and pretty much ends the feud. I know they'll fight again on TV, but this is really pretty much the feud ender. But it was a tough, stiff match. It was pretty good, not up to the standards, but still a very good match. One that, on a standalone, when you don't factor in the rest of the feud, you wouldn't have been too disappointed to see.
Right, and it's amazing how... I think the one thing that disappointed me was the end, because it's like the whole – when Angle was the face and Austin was the heel, you had that whole 2.5 month stretch where Austin couldn't pin Angle with the stunner, stun him a million times. Angle would kick out. And then here it's like just another typical Austin face match, one stunner and Kurt's done. It's like, so, you know, after kicking out of it a million times over 2.5 months or
right,
3 months,
right, yeah.
All of a sudden, kicks out and that's it. It's over.
He's a heel.
Yeah, very weird.
But the I thought it was very smart to have this first as well. Because Austin winning adds the most ambiguity to what's to come. Austin Rock doesn't surprise you, and then Austin Jericho straight up doesn't surprise you either. Like, you know Angle wasn't going to win. I mean, it just wasn't going to happen. So you get Austin out of the way, and then that leads to a little bit of question in the next match.
Yes. And the next match is the other semifinal for the just plain World Championship.
By the way, WCF was onto this idea in 1995. But go ahead.
Really? You had two world titles?
No, but we had the four men fight, and then they clashed in the finals where the two guys advanced, but go ahead.
That is right, yes. That is quite true. But there's a lot of air of tension in the air dealing with management and booking. It might have to be a part two behind the music of WCF. All right, so you have Chris Jericho, who, of course, has a little cred now, beating Rock at No Mercy to win the then WCW world title, and then losing it a couple weeks later to Rock, and that didn't hurt him. Because you need a Rock to have the belt at Survivor Series, because you had the two torchbearers, Austin with one belt, Rock with the other. So that was fine. This is a great match. Is it their best of the quartet? We still got one left to go. We'll talk about next week or in 2 weeks. Did you like it? Let me ask you this. Did it surprise you? I know we all love the Raw. We love the Raw match, and we love the No Mercy match.
Yep.
Did this surprise you that it was... not as
no, because you knew it was
better
be
than those two.
You knew it was going to be compressed because of the setup. They weren't going to get another 25 minutes or whatever the hell they got, and they weren't going to go completely all out because they had one of them had another match to wrestle. So you knew both of these matches weren't going to be as good as we're used to seeing, and that's one of the negatives of having this style of little tournament on the show. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, I thought it was fine. It was a fine installment in their feud, almost like a synopsis of the matches so far. And you could tell that it wasn't going to be it for them. I hated Jericho's red tints in his hair. I feel like the more he's elevated and climbs the ladder, the more stupid and ridiculous he's looked. Like,
yeah,
and he's finally in the main event scene, and he's got these fucking red highlights in his hair, and I don't know. It just
looks terrible.
Didn't make sense to me. Like,
you know what's weird? Not nearly as bad as Christian, but he even had that kind of indie ECW-ish look. Not nearly as bad as Christian did.
No, yeah.
And still does. Right. But at the same time, still, it changes as we get through, you know, as we get into 2002. But it was pretty, it was kind of weird. Match was good. I had no problem.
Well, I thought the whole thing was Jericho's determined to prove himself. You know, he's trying to shed the choker image that they've saddled him with. And he dominates, I thought, pretty much from the whole bell. Rock kept trying to come back, and Jericho kept fighting him off. And, you know, they hit the sleeper, which I thought slowed things down a bit. Jericho works it, but, you know, we're only in the first match of the tournament for them. I thought it could have been a little bit faster throughout. And I think that's why, to me, it falls behind the pace of the other two matches. I don't feel like those other two slowed down like this one did. Again, I thought it was a good move having Austin wins first, because now either opponent makes sense here. Rock was kind of expected, but you wouldn't be completely shocked for Jericho. To win either. Jericho goes for a move on the table. That backfires. Rock DDTs him through it. And I kind of start to feel, and I'm curious if you feel that way too, they were playing it up like Jericho's desperation was starting to cost him here. Did you think he was going to lose at this point? They were kind of playing up that he was losing control in the match.
Yeah, that he was so focused on one specific thing and he had everything.
Well, he was so obsessed with winning, and the pressure he felt was so hot that he was starting to crumble a little bit.
Yep. And you had an experienced guy like Rock who had already beaten Jericho when he was trying to keep things together on that Raw to lose the title, that I think they were definitely painting the picture that, or at least JR was, King was as usual, not doing anything, that Jericho was definitely kind of trying to clutch onto something and was losing the grip of it. And then, and then stunned as, he rock bottoms Rock, to actually win the championship. So,
All right, well, a few more things before we get to that. His sharpshooter was terrible. Jericho's. One of the worst sharpshooters I've ever seen. At one point, he was literally just holding his ankles off the ground and, like, leaning all the way forward. And Rock was selling it like...
this bad as Rock's.
Rock was selling it like he was stabbing him in the kidneys with a fucking knife. And he's laying there, like, holding his ankles gently off the ground. It was brutal. I thought it was awful.
it was bad.
Vince comes out and runs a distraction. Jericho hits a low blow. And then, as you said, hits the rock bottom. I hated the finish. I hated Vince's distraction. I hated that Jericho still... I mean, he's his second huge win, but he still hasn't beaten Rock clean.
Yep.
This
is where we're getting back to the Vince overload. It's getting out of hand.
It's just with Jericho. Like, I just felt like he didn't need to friggin' win this way, you know?
I think so. Yeah,
I thought he could have gotten one clean win over the Rock.
Yeah,
I feel like he just hasn't gotten that yet, and we can already tell now what kind of heel run he's going to have. You know, it's been proven. Do you think this should have been Jericho's first title win instead of No Mercy, or do you think No Mercy he needed that to legitimize him into this?
No, he needed the No Mercy win. Why would you? I don't think it would have. I think it would have because,
he still hasn't won the other title. So,
yeah, and he's not undisputed. He was just one of the two bigs,
right?
So, no, I don't think the No Mercy does. I still like that. I still like having him win there. I had no problem with it.
Okay.
Needed to add a little, and you needed something to add to what would, to eventually the Survivor Series match, the 10 man. So, I had no problem with it here. It's only technically a semifinal. The belt's just ancillary.
Right.
It's only, it's really only a semifinal.
Well, he becomes champion, though. I mean,
he does technically become champion, but no one's thinking about it because he's not the champion, which is the whole point of the show. Because he could walk away with because the match the show isn't over yet, you're thinking, well, he'll probably walk away with none anyway. And here's and as much as think of this just came to my mind. Even though Rock got screwed because of Vince interference, you think to yourself, well, is that going to happen again? Is Vince just going to interfere again?
Right.
Nah, they can't be that lazy. Can they? You know what I mean? So I think there was a little, as we head to the finals, which we'll get to in a moment. I think there was a little aura of uncertainty based on that.
Right.
I think a lot of people may have been thinking, I don't think you're going to see Vince interfere two matches in a row.
No, and I thought Austin was probably going to win. I mean, it was like, you know, we were all rooting for Jericho, but until he did it, no one really thought it was ever going to happen. Like, I still didn't think it was going to happen heading into this match. And
I mean,
that's why I thought it was important to have Austin win the first one. Because if Jericho won the first one, then you know what's coming. Austin winning, you still had a lot of ambiguity in this match here.
Right. So here we go.
Yeah, no this rest for Jericho.
No, zero. Because the Austin's music hits the minute that the three right. count's finished. And now we've reached the main event.
PTB Nation, it is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan update.
I got my 2x4. Something I could have made his ass a real man. Something I wanted, but I never was pushy. The motherfucker never ate my pussy.
Pleased to be Nation, this is Mark Claire.
You know, it's been a trying and powerful time these last few weeks. Vince is still in a coma, as you guys know. I mean, it's really reaching the end of any kind of hope we might have for a recovery, but that heart is still beating. As you guys know, I've been playing you guys audio diaries that Vince has been recording his entire life. In the case of this very situation, him being incapacitated, so he could still come and deliver the goods, deliver his style, his classic Vince Kennedy McMahon style to Place to Be Nation. And this week, I've got another audio diary for you. Let's go to the tape.
He made his ass a real man, something I wanted, but I never was pushy.
Oh, Vince, I get it. Calm down.
You calm down, Woodling. I'm not here for fucking game time. What do you think this is? I just finished getting over SummerSlam, and my son-in-law taking over the company and all this shit. I got to come here and deal with this bullshit now with your stupid piece of crap website.
Look, man, we've been going strong for over 3 months now.
Oh, over 3 months. Let's crown you the next fucking Ring of Honor.
We just brought Scott Keith on board.
Oh, God, okay. That piece of garbage. I thought I burned his old apartment down. He didn't die in that fire?
Listen. Let's have some real talk here, okay?
Oh, here
you give
we go.
Me 5 minutes a week tops. With
yeah,
fucking
5 minutes! That's worth anything more than on your site! I should be the main stakeholder in this site.
You know, I'm going through the PTBN books.
By the way, Brad, what yes. happened to that guy that was counting down all those movies? I was really into that series. There was like four of them, and then they never came back.
You know,
Jaws? Snow Dogs? Is that the one he did?
Snow Dogs 1, 2, and 3, actually. Oh, okay. But listen, you know, I get the Hacksaw Jim Duggan thing or whatever, but I've been going through
Who?
Books.
I've that been going jobber from the 80s?
Yes, that's oh. him. I've been going through the PTBN books that our accountant, Chad Campbell, puts together. You know,
oh,
Chad?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I've heard of him before.
Listen to the people that apparently I pay a stipend to each time you come on the show.
Okay.
Anthony fucking Armento?
Armento.
Mark Claire, but at least, you know, Mark also contributes eloquent libertarian propaganda.
He does what? Claire's a Republican!
Okay. Matt Rotella?
Yeah, that's an agreement with the state. There's nothing I can do about that one. I'm sorry.
And you got his dad, apparently, for the last, you know, I'm not even sure.
Oh, there's an issue there. I mean, look, I don't want to get into all of it right now. There's an issue there with we don't really know whose son Matt is, and there's all those. There's a reason he's on the payroll, all
right? And finally, some detective with some garbled ass.
Don't worry about it. You're gonna stop poking around, Woodling.
Listen, this is
what. Want to end up like Gorilla Monster? What?
This is what I need from you.
Okay.
I need you to be more like Parv.
Who?
Okay.
The AWA schmuck. That guy.
Look, you know, right.
The
now,
guy that loves Haystacks Calhoun.
He's a big Haystacks Calhoun fan. Right now, he's got Where the Big Boys Play, and
oh,
he's
God.
Told me he's going to be launching a new podcast, Titans of Wrestling. It's going to be covering some of your material.
Oh, yeah, that's what we need, another podcast. Dead end street. Is that podcast, video on demand, cable, baby. Cable's where it's at. Wait till the network launches, end of the year, on cable.
Let me tell you what else Parv does for us. He does music pieces. He just gave me 10,000 words on David Bowie. What can you do?
I'll give you 10,000 words right now. Have you ever heard of Vince McMahon's evolution of my iPod? Yeah, yeah, but it's a 5 o'clock world when the whistle blows. No one owns a piece of my time. And there's a 5 o'clock me inside my clothes, thinking that the world looks fine. Yeah, Adelaide. Yeah, let me tell you now, when I come home feeling tired and beat, I go up where the air is fresh and sweet, up on the roof. How many understanding, sympathy and trust abounding, no more falsehoods or derisions, golden living dreams of visions, mystical crystal revelation, and the mind's true liberation. Aquarius! Aquarius! And now our bodies are oh so close and tight. It never felt so good, it never felt so right. And we're glowing like the metal on an edge of a knife. Glowing like the metal on the edge of a knife. Come on! Hold on tight! Come on! Hold on tight! Though it's cold and lonely in the deep, dark Africa, I can see paradise by the dashboard light. This is Thriller! Thriller night! And no one's gonna save you from the beast that's about to strike. You know it's Thriller! Thriller night! You're fighting for your life inside a killer thriller tonight! Comes crashing down and it hurts inside! You gotta take a stand, it don't help to hide! When they insist on knowing my bliss, I tell them this. When they want to know what my reason is, I only smile when I lie, then I tell them why. Because your kiss is on my list. Because your kiss is on my list. Come on, Eileen. Oh, I swear what he means. At this moment, you mean everything. You in that dress. My thoughts, I confess, verge on dirty. Oh, come on, Eileen. And I'm gonna keep on loving you, 'cause it's the only thing I wanna do. I don't wanna sleep, I just wanna keep on loving you. Never gonna dance again. Guilty feet have got no rhythm. Though it's easy to pretend, I know you're not a fool. I should have known better than to cheat a friend and waste the chance that I have been given. So I'm never gonna dance again the way I dance with you. You got what I need, but you say he's just a friend, and you say he's just a friend. Oh, baby, you, Jeremy, spoke in class today. On stage or on record, go to the Wiz and select it. Take it off the rack. If it's whack, put it back. I like the Whopper, Big Mac. Say, come on, Eileen. These things are real, and I know how you feel. No, ruler, 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 hey. Come on, Eileen. Oh, I swear what he means. At this moment, you mean everything. You and me, we come from different worlds. You like to laugh at me when I look at other girls. Sometimes you're crazy, and you wonder why. I'm such a baby 'cause the dolphins make me cry. It was all a dream. I used to read Word Up magazine. Salt and pepper and heavy D up in the limousine. hanging pictures on my wall. Every Saturday, Rap Attack, Mr. Magic, Marley Mall. I let my tape rock till my tape pop. Smoking weed and bamboo, slipping on private stock. Way back when I had the red and black lumberjack with the hat to match. You are my fire, the one desire, belief. When I say I want it that way, promiscuous girl, wherever you are, I'm all alone, and it's you that I want. Promiscuous boy, you already know that I'm all yours. What are you waiting for? Promiscuous girl, you're teasing me. You got what I want, and you got what I need. Promiscuous boy, let's get to the point, cause we're on a roll. Are you ready? What you gonna do with all that junk inside your trunk? I'm gonna get you drunk. Get you drunk and get off my hump. What you gonna do with all that ass inside them jeans? I'm gonna make you scream, make you scream, make you scream. Take a look at my girlfriend. She's the only one I got. Ba-da-da-da. Not much of a girlfriend. I never seem to get a lot. Ba 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 ba. Ra 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 ah ah. Roma ma ma ma. Ga ga ooh la la. I want your romance. I want your ugly. I want your disease. I want your everything as long as it's free. I want your love. La ba ba. I want your love. Don't you hear you say nothing but a heartache? Ain't nothing but a mistake. I never wanna hear you say I want it that way. I see you drive around town with the girl I love, and I'm like, fuck you. Ooh, ooh, ooh. I guess the change in my pocket wasn't enough. I'm like, fuck you, and fuck her too. But you didn't have to cut me off. Make out like it never happened. We were nothing, and I don't even need your love. But you treat me like a stranger, and that feels so rough. No, you didn't have to stoop so low. Have your friends collect your records and change your number. I guess I don't need that though. Now you're just somebody that I used to know. What do you think, Woodling? You can finally tell Grant Owens you found new music.
I'll tell you what, I am impressed, and if I'm looking at the paperwork you gave me, there's a dance routine you have.
Everything,
for this
it's all choreographed. Just give me the hottest video. I'm gonna have these hot trainers that work at Titan Towers help me get into shape, and I'm gonna air it on your website. It's gonna be awesome.
Well, you know, all right. Let me tell you what we can cook up here. Okay,
all right.
I'm sure you've listened to my personal podcast,
yep.
The Brad and Chad Show.
Oh yeah, I've heard them all 19 of them. Yep.
We've been experimenting, actually,
yeah,
with a format on there. And so we're ready to unleash that to a celebrity, a place to be nation. And that could be you, Vince. You can come on. You can have your own little corner of the website.
Oh.
You got this guy, Justin Rosario.
It's crazy. It's not like I have my own website. This would be great. This would be a great opportunity for me. Keep going.
Yep. And we've got this guy, Justin Rosario.
Sounds handsome.
Yep. He'll produce a biweekly podcast. He's okay. You know, he'll produce a biweekly podcast for you. And you can have on all your favorite old wrestlers like Kamala, B. Brian Blair.
Hanson, the band, my favorite band of all time.
Absolutely. I mean, we can do this for you at Place to Be Nation. What do you say?
I'm down. Let's do it. Sign it up. I only have one stipulation.
Okay, go ahead.
We need to fire Parv. I don't like him.
You think this is best for business?
It's best for business, Woodling. Do you agree?
I'm sorry, Vince. I can't. Maybe we can work.
All right, Mr. Woodling. Thank you so much for coming. We appreciate you coming out here to try and save Parv's job. We're all set. Thank you very much and good night. Hey, Parv, you're fired. And you know why? There were times, so I'm sure you knew, when I bit off more than I could chew. WBF and FXL. But through it all, when there was doubt, I ate it up and spit it out, AWA, and I faced it all, WCW, and I stood tall. VKM did it his way. Rotella, start the limo. We're out of here. Well, Vince, we'll leave that one alone. So, to kind of reset the playing field, Angle and Austin, Angle jumps Austin, Rock jumps Jericho before the match even starts. So now they're both laid out. Mm-hmm. And what's kind of cool, Scott, the first singles match for these guys.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
Oh, no, they fought on Raw. I'm sorry. First pay-per-view singles
match. Oh, yeah, they fought on Raw back in, but that was different. The roles were reversed.
Right.
Back in May.
Yes.
Yeah.
They haven't fought on pay-per-view in a singles match. So.
Yeah, late May.
Yeah.
Late May, early June.
Jericho's nasty bump. I don't know if you caught that when Austin knocked him off the apron to the floor. He like almost fucking breaks his neck falling on the ground.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Jericho just seemed to be going so fast and was so hyped up. I still thought he was working just a tad. So, like, I feel like he wasn't as crisp as he normally would have been ever since really like the summer. I think he still hasn't. He just seems all over the place. Like, he's just going too quick. But I thought it was pretty good. He works Austin's shoulder, which I thought was different. We haven't seen that in a while. I thought it was pretty good structure. The arm attack by Jericho. Very different than the style than the Rock match was. So that was cool to see Jericho work two completely different styles back to back. Flair and Vince both come out. Flair yanks Nick Patrick out of the ring and punches him. And then Vince wipes out Flair. And then Austin beats up Vince. So it's just chaos at this point. Jericho taps, no referee. Booker comes out and helps. And now we've kind of established Vince's new heel cronies, Angle, Jericho, and Booker. And then Jericho ends up getting the win after all the interference, still kind of looking shaky. And, Scott, do you agree or disagree that he basically looks more like Vince's pawn than a champion?
Oh, of course he does.
It would have been like Dude Love winning in May of 98. Like,
they're all pawns. Every single guy's a pawn. I hated the Booker. As much as I don't mind Jericho winning, I hated the Booker run-in. I hated it. You know what's strange? I would have gone with a reverse. I don't know what I would have done here. You're going to think I'm nuts, but I would have somewhere in these three matches, this is where I would have maybe inserted RVD in a run-in.
No, maybe keep him out of this. Keep him out of this. Establishes what? Well, what do you think? Help Austin, I guess? Maybe? I don't know. You already had Flair out there. He would have been lost in the shuffle, I think.
Well, I would have cleaned out all of that interference. I would have skipped all that crap. Because that whole last like 4 minutes of this match was a shit show, in my opinion. Maybe because I was not yet the biggest Booker fan, and I thought he was kind of dried out. I thought he was almost worse off than DDP. But you know, Booker has a little more cred, I suppose, at that point. But
well, the problem is, too, they don't really stick with the Vince thing.
Right.
Right. They almost align it here, Vince's cronies, and it doesn't really continue on.
No. Now, Booker wasn't an employee, but obviously, you know, the whole premise is you help me get the belt and I'll find you work, and then he runs off into the... I mean, the only thing that keeps it somewhat legit is that he doesn't go up the ramp with Vince. He runs off into the crowd. You don't see him again.
And he doesn't kill Austin like he did,
like he did in June, where he almost snapped his neck or whatever, broke his back.
I mean, it was good that Jericho was made. It was big. He needed this win to finally be legitimate. And the question now is, could they sustain it? Could they legitimize him? Or was he going to be kind of a bitch champion that, you know, snuck out wins? And every time he's won a big match so far, he still had to cheat, which is fine to establish him as a heel, that he had to finally go heel and go evil. But, you know, Austin did the same gimmick back in March, and he didn't have to cheat every title win.
No.
At some point, Jericho needs to start winning matches without the aid of interference and chairs. Mm-hmm. And that's my problem to this point. Like,
so that ruins the moment?
No, it doesn't ruin the moment. It's still really cool, and it was a big step for them to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes a bite out of his legitimacy.
Even though he's a heel, and that's kind of the way it's supposed to be.
Not every time.
Okay.
Like not every. Like he could have.
I think he should have beat Rock clean.
I agree. I think he should,
some kind of interference here. I thought there was way too much of it, but I didn't mind a little something. But to do it two matches in a row, like I kind of prefaced before. Doing two of them in a row is just overkill. You're fucking ruining him.
He needs to get over the Rock hump on his own.
Yeah.
And then you restart with Austin. You have more interference than you build to a future match with them. Mm-hmm. I thought this match was good, not great. I thought it was very good, though. I thought all three of the matches were about the same, honestly. Mm-hmm. If you combine the three into one big segment, it's a pretty good, you know, hour block of wrestling. So
I agree.
So there you go. Jericho is a made man. The man. Will he continue on? We'll see. We'll see how they utilize him, how they push him. Will he hold the title all the way to Mania? Who's going to win the Rumble? A lot of questions still up in the air heading into the end of 01. Quick thoughts as a show overall?
Yeah. I mean, the undercard still was... But it's funny. I'm reading my comments, and I did a 180. I actually, when I first wrote this... When did we do this one? Sometime in 08, probably, let me see. November 30th, 08 is when we posted it to the board. I agreed with you 100%. So my thoughts today and over the last have turned since I wrote this, because in my I will quote my analysis. Sure, RVD lost, but he took a pretty good beating, and Taker needed the win to get his confidence back after a very subpar 2001. Blah blah blah. So I did agree with you. Some reason I don't know. Just my opinion changed as time went on, but I did agree with you at one point about that, and I still kind of do. And it's not, again, it's Taker's turn was huge. I just wish it was somebody else other than RVD. But overall, I think the undercard was good, a little lacking. I thought the matchups on paper seemed pretty cool, but some of the executions, like we talked about with Edge and Regal, lacked a little something. But with this show out of the way, now we focus on a real reboot. This was kind of a three-quarters reboot.
No, that's true. You're getting the titles reset. You're kind of reestablishing, you know, who your main players are. This is kind of the completion of that. It's right. Like the bridge show heading into the run to Mania now. So, yeah, I agree with you there.
Yeah, but I'm stoked to coming up for 2002, because we got some awesome shows throughout 02. We got some duds. Not a lot, but a couple. Mm. But 02 is a fascinating year. It's kind of like...
02 is crazy. I mean, 01 was a crazy year with everything that happened, but 02 was just ridiculous.
Bonkers.
There's so much change. So many different things to talk about. We'll be very busy in 2002.
Yes.
A lot of changes, a lot of new faces, guys leaving and overhaul the company completely.
Or huge returns.
Yep. So a lot to discuss, and we'll get to it all in a couple weeks. So we'll be back Wednesday night. Kevin Kelly will be here to discuss the end of 2001 in the WWF. Next Monday, we'll have our March Madness preview show, Scott. And that'll be me, you, Matt Rotella, your brother Chris, and Andrew Reich. Yep. The fourth year going through the brackets.
Yes.
Always a lot of fun. And then next Wednesday, episode 300 Extravaganza, right here on PlaceOfNation.com. Also, be sure to check out the inaugural edition of PTBN's Extra Point.
Yes.
Our brand new sports show led by you and Dr. G, George Rebellino. You have a bunch of different analysts on talking all kinds of sports. And that'll premiere Tuesday afternoon leading into the NFL free agency on PlaceOfNation.com. That'll be a bi-weekly show similar to Main Event and the Kevin Kelly Show. So all kinds of things happening here.
Yes, all things pop.
All things pop. So we'll be back Wednesday night with Kevin. Until then, that is Scott. I am Justin. The titles are unified. 2002 is upon us. We'll talk to you Wednesday night.
Can you unify Art Adano and Barry Horowitz's?
Can you unify your heart back together after looking at Triple H?
Can you unify Air Supply and Elton John? I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I got all the answers to your questions. I'll be the teacher, you could be the lesson. I'll be the preacher, you be the confession. I'll be the quick relief to all your stressing. It's a thin line between love and hate. Is you really real or is you really fake?